Call this meeting to order. This is the work session of the Mayor and Council of the City of Bisbee, County of Cochise, and State of Arizona, to be held on Wednesday, April 19th, 2017, at 5:30 p.m. in the Bisbee Municipal Building, 118 Arizona Street, Bisbee, Arizona. Ms. Coronado, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Anna Klein? Not here. Councilmember Joan Hansen?
Here.
Councilmember Frank Davis?
Here.
Mayor David Smith?
Present.
Councilmember Bill Higgins?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Douglas Dunn?
Here.
Councilmember Gabe Lindstrom's not here. City staff, Richard Marsh, City Manager, Ashley Coronado, City Clerk, Carrie Bagley, Finance Director, Andy Heratic, Public Works Director, Britt Hansen, City Attorney.
Thank you. I did receive an email from Mr. Lindstrom indicating that he didn't know if he'd be able to make it or not because of work. We have one item, and that is presentation and discussion of the proposed budget for fiscal year 2017-2018. Mr. Marsh, City Manager, and Ms. Bagley, Finance Director. Mr. Marsh.
Mayor?
Yes.
I'd like to make some overview initial comments, if I may.
Sure.
I think it's important. This is my fourth budget, and I think in the past the budget has been presented to us as a way of getting by one more year, and I think this budget is presented to us as much more than that. I see some really interesting discussion that's going to come out of this as a result of how you prepared it. In the past, it's been kind of kicking the can down the road one more year, and with little opportunity for actual interaction between the council and the community and staff, and I appreciate the opportunity to do that this time. Certainly, we have some very serious financial issues. The first, of course, is the public safety retirement obligation and how to deal with that. I keep reminding people that we live in a very peculiar community in terms of built on the side of a mountain, pure rock, spread out over 5 miles from one end to the other. This is not a place to provide efficient public services. I think Andy made the comment that we have more, we have as many miles of streets in Bisbee as we do in Sierra Vista. But with a much smaller staff in terms of doing that. While we have some significant financial issues, we also have citizens who want more services. We want more library service. We want to be open on Saturdays. We want to expand a swimming pool, animal shelter, no-kill animal shelter, more recycling, more policing of dilapidated properties, junky properties, speed bumps, and go on in terms of additional items that people want. Also, the thanks to staff, we over a month ago held a council staff retreat in which we identified action strategies, and that has been presented to us at a previous meeting. And it's a push in terms of the city not only having to meet these immediate issues, but also wanting to look to the future as to how can we be more proactive in preparing ourselves for the future, develop a sustainable funding, have a long-term viability of this community, which is quite different from a resignation through a death spiral. We are certainly committed here looking at then not only how do we get by this year, but also then how do we prepare ourselves for the future. Certainly the draft budget that's prepared for us, I think, is quite different from prior budgets that I've had in the four budgets that I've been here. And I applaud the city manager and staff in terms of preparing that. We're going to have, I think, a considerable discussion as a result of how you've presented this, which is different from how it's been in the past. And I'm looking forward to discussion, which I think is going to be contentious at points. And I applaud you for welcoming this. So anyway, I just want, Mayor, I wanted to state that in terms of my perspective, in terms of this is my fourth one, and what I think is kind of unique in terms of how this is being presented, and I think it's time for us now to roll up our sleeves and to begin.
Thank you, sir. I did want to indicate that I will allow call to the public, and I apologize, I jumped ahead there, Mr. Mars, trying to get this thing rolling. Ms. Blackford is signed up for call to the public. Ms. Blackford?
Good evening. None of us really kind of like this deal, but that's not my decision, but okay. After reviewing this total proposed budget, several items jumped out at me, and one of them is I think it's illegal to take taxpayer enterprise fund money to go into the general fund one time or not. Number two, why are you taking money from three enterprise funds to pay three quarters of the amount of the cost of the whole finance department? Where is the general fund money that usually does this now going to? Why in the world do we need to hire more city employees? Like an assistant city manager position that was voted down several years ago by the council and mayor. Why is Mr. Marsh getting a $10,000 raise in just being here for a year? For what? Personal director, why? Community director at $65K to create a position for Ms. Green? Two recycling peoples? With what magic money is being created down in the basement? We are a town taking in money less each year, and we need to find out the truth. The mayor stated last night that we could not afford a four-year forensic audit. But if you take the salaries of the people that you're proposing for, we would have more than enough money to pay for a forensic audit, which is really morally owed to the taxpayers of this town. To me, this budget is just like the last 3 years' budget, just another shell game being played on the tax voters. Remember, you are all legally accountable to the taxpayers. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blackford. Ms. Giacomino, you're also down for speaking on the youth fund. However, I don't believe we'll be discussing the youth fund tonight. Yes, ma'am. And this is divided into areas which had been advertised. We're speaking of public works budget tonight. Next week will be public safety budget, and then will be the other budgets. But tonight we will not be speaking on the youth fund. You're welcome to, of course, take your 3 minutes and address us on that at this time if you'd like.
I'm Luigi Giacomino, and I reside in Warren. The first youth council that came up...
Would you speak up?
The first youth council that came up, they sold the old recreation center. They were supposed to build the kids a recreation center. They put it in the general fund and spent it. 1986, there was an ordinance that they were to build it. When they sold fire station and the police station up in Old Bisbee, I secured the money, had an ordinance passed for, it was $103,000, and they could, the youth fund, the children of that run the youth fund could only spend the interest gained. They donated to Berry Gulch Days, to Gumper, to help out them, the kids. He was doing a kids thing. They spent $10,000 on this skate park over here. They bought that slide up at the swimming pool for $10,000. They bought all kinds of toys at Christmas. They went with the firemen and delivered them. They have cleaned the cemetery for me, free gratis, not spend any money. I cannot understand why they want to rob our children of $55,000 when there's an ordinance that says it cannot be done. And that's all I have to say, and I will be back when you discuss it again. You have more.
Thank you, ma'am. As you know, we can't really reply because it's called the public.
That. I know.
But at that time, I'm sure that you'll be made. You'll understand that what's going on. And thank you very much.
I understand what's going on. What bothers me.
Mr. Key.
Thank you. You don't need that equipment either.
Mr. Marsh.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mayor. I want to say good evening, Mayor, Council, city staff, and our guests. I want to apologize to you in advance for the lengthy presentation you're going to have from three of us today. I apologize, but I don't regret it because of the critical state that we find ourselves in financially. Normally, you know, I like to get in and out. But because of where we find ourselves, it's important that we do a very good job at informing City Council of the truth. And we did not create this, we collectively, but I do believe that we can pull ourselves out of what we find ourselves in right now. What's worse than knowing the truth is not knowing it. And so what you have before you is a factual budget, and we may have make some adjustments and changes along the way. We understand that. We get that. No problem. And this is just why it's a proposed draft budget. I'll start off with the first presentation. I'm sorry, slide, and I'm not very good at working this. So be patient with me. Maybe I'll hit the light. I'm going to give you, this is the presentation overview. Mine is going to be about 15 to 20 minutes max, and then we'll have Pat Walker, who's here with us tonight, who most of you may are aware of. She's a consultant for the Arizona Towns and League and Cities, who does consulting work for several cities throughout the state of Arizona. First, in my presentation, we're going to look at the viewpoint expression safe zone. I'll talk more about that. My presentation, we're going to talk about our 2017-18 budget process, and I thank you, Councilman Dunn, for your comments, because we have had with our department heads at least probably two or three rounds each with each department head and staff. And in fact, we've had all employee city meetings, two of those, to include the city employees on what we're proposing and to get their feedback and input as well. The 2018-2020 action plan that Councilman Dunn referenced that we adopted, I believe it was just a month or two ago, I'm going to reflect on the budget highlights that's being proposed this year as it does encompass the goals that were established by the City Council, so they work hand in hand. This budget is a reflection of the goals that have been adopted by City Council. Next, we're going to have a budget 101 orientation for particularly the new council members who don't understand and know how budgets actually work. We have Pat here to conduct that for us. We're going to look at our 2017-18 revenue expenditure projections. And again, as Councilman Dunn referenced, we're not looking at one year at a time. We're looking at how this budget, if as proposed, or what the budget is that we do adopt, how that's going to look in terms of what our financial situation will look like over the next, incrementally, 1 year throughout the next 5 years. And lastly, we'll have Carrie. She's going to do the budget presentation for the Public Works, which is what we're here for tonight. I apologize again because tonight's meeting is going to be a little longer than the rest of our sessions, but it's important that we do take care of the serious business that is before us. Viewpoint expression safe zone. These comments that I have before you tonight are things that were brought up at the strategic planning session, and I felt it was warranted for us to revisit these comments that were made. If you take a look at that individual worldview, the lens metaphor is what Dr. Oren referenced. And our lenses, we all have different lenses, and based on how we see things is based on our personal backgrounds and experiences, elected official lenses versus administrative team lenses versus employee lenses, and the community lenses. We all may see things differently. There's no right or wrong in most cases, but there are differences between us, and they can become stumbling blocks in effective decision-making process, to make effective decisions. However, differences can also cause conflict. They can cause disagreement, contention over goals, how problems are defined, what issues to address, how to address issues, perceptions of what local government can or cannot do. We can look at it as two sides of the same coin. Differences can be the greatest source of strength, and they also can be the greatest source of conflict and contention, which Councilman Dunn referenced. But the characteristics of a very effective group is the willingness to acknowledge our differences is very crucial, and we all need to be free to express our viewpoints and how we see things. We must be open to others with contrary views, explore and hear all points of view, and pursue argument about how to work together for the goals of the good of the community. This way we build trust among ourselves as the leadership team and within our community. It says we air our views and we accept the differences that emerge. Indeed, we recognize and acknowledge that the differences can, in fact, strengthen the decision-making process. We make decisions, even if it means split decisions, honor the official decision, and that are made by council. And even if we weren't in the majority, it didn't support the position, and continue to work together to address the next issue in a spirit of respect, truth, and cooperation. And our leadership team, as we talk with the leadership team, as we develop this process, those were the principles that we live by, and we hopefully as we move forward, this is something we all can buy into. Next, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about the budget process. First workshop is tonight. It lists what we will discuss tonight. Second work session will be public safety, which is next Wednesday. The third, city manager, council, finance, legal, information system. And the fourth will be community development, culture, recreation, building inspection, and on and on. You all have copies of this. Tuesday of the 16th of May is when the tentative budget will be adopted. And Tuesday the 20th, we're looking for final adoption. So literally in this process, what we built in, there's six meetings where we can have input from both the public and also the mayor and the council. Wednesday, July 5th, adoption of the property tax levy. And what you will see here, July 2017, I'm proposing, because of the seriousness of the financial situation we find ourselves in, that we don't wait to January of next year to begin discussion for our fiscal year 2018-19 budget. We need to begin those discussions, in my opinion, as early as July of this year. And in fact, that was a recommendation of our consultant in our strategic planning session, and we built this into the budget process this year. The date to be determined at a later time. Let's go to the action plan that was adopted by council about a month ago. First goal was ensure city's financial sustainability. In here, and I'd like to back up and say that there was a confidential survey sent to the mayor and the council and to our leadership team, and the question was asked, what are the most critical issues that you feel that are facing the city of Bisbee? What surface is number one? Is this here, the obligation of the public safety personnel retirement system as part of our financial challenge and require an annual general fund commitment of this year is close to $1.5 million, which is nearly 20% of our overall budget, which means fewer resources to provide other services sought by residents. Related to that, it is the extensive commitment to supporting fire service operation at the current levels, which most participants consider to be unsustainable. The second, actually the highest priority that came out of the session dealing with ensuring city financial sustainability was unpaid bills owed to the city. Second, it was determined that we need to host a community conversation about the financial crisis facing the city. included what we perceive as unsustainable operation of the fire department, and we're proposing to have this community-wide discussion regarding our financial crisis in July after this fiscal year. Of course, we'll be talking about that through this budget process as well. But again, as we look forward to our next year's budget, we need to have that conversation as early as July. It also, we also decided that another goal under the ensuring the city financial sustainability that we need to look at a complete detailed analysis of all fee-based services and adjust fee levels. What's in red here, we need to look at an event policy fee as an example. We need to make sure that the fee that we are charging covers our direct cost for doing business. Another priority, when resources permit, we're identified. This is more long-term, although we're working on some of these issues in terms of annexation at this time. Goal number two that was adopted by council, diversify the Bisbee economy. Everyone at that meeting first acknowledged our heavy reliance on tourism as an economic driver, and thus the action strategy was designed to build on tourism, but also to identify and expand other economy-based drivers for the city of Bisbee, with the focus on attracting young professionals and entrepreneurs. One of the highest priorities would identify and implement creative opportunities for overnight stays, pursue business-ready attention by adopting best practices for development. In red, it states, if I understood correctly, which is Ms. Dr. Earl speaking, Arizona does not have a statewide program certifying business-ready communities as Michigan does, but the city can identify those best practices deemed applicable and seek to put them in place. I'll get in detail about what those should be and look like. Also, strengthen linkage between the Mexican community and take advantage of commerce and trade that might come from the port of entry destinations, and develop a target market analysis to identify markets and investment, what we might go after and recruit. Recruit is important, meaning we can't sit behind a desk and expect it to happen. We got to go out and make it happen. Also, priority when resources permit, we can read those. That's more of a long-term strategy. Goal three that's been adopted by council, recruit and attract young entrepreneurs and families to Bisbee. Highest priority was target young entrepreneurs again, young families. And in red, it talks about what we need to do, and we agreed to do, was to reach out to a demographic group that can bring economic investment and young families that are viewed as important to community sustainability. I think Fred Miller mentioned in one meeting, a lot of us are getting older and dying off. We got to look at, including myself, we got to look at sustainability. We got to embrace our young entrepreneurs. There are many of them here that don't feel welcome for what they're telling me, but we need to have a community meeting to discuss it and how we can better embrace them and support them. Goal three, recruit and attract again, but under that, a strategy identifies specific target markets for outreach efforts to this demographic, encourage current residents from this demographic to develop a better understanding of their needs and expectations in terms of city services and amenities. And we talked about earlier how we may go about getting there. Goal three, this is resources permit, a little more long term. You can read that later. Goal four, which is our last goal that was adopted by the mayor and the council, and I'll go to the red. The number of employees has declined. Service salary levels have been stagnated, and most employees are doing more for the same wage, and job description have not kept up with the duties now being performed by many of our employees. This, too, is unsustainable, but the worry was that raising expectations for significant change in the short term may not be wise. But we did say we needed to do a wage job classification study because there is parity within our organization compared to other communities. And that is one of the strategies that you see, job classification study. We also talked about improving working conditions. We also mentioned that there be a annual appreciation day, that the employees are chopping at the bit, to get some of the mayor's briskets, because they heard about how well he cooks. And anyone else on the council who is going to participate in that we welcome you to do that. It would be a wonderful thing for our staff. This is, again, goal 4, attract, develop, and retain employees. This is with priority when resources permit, more long-term. All right, this is the final section of my presentation where I'm talking about budget highlights that you will find, or that we're proposing, that are being done currently, but also what we need to be doing in the future. And our budget has been built on the 4 goals. It has been activities that were identified in the budget so we can accomplish those 4 goals over the next year or two. That budget reflects that. These budget highlights are tied into that strategic plan that has been adopted by the mayor and the city council. Fortunately, currently, we've been doing some of those things already. RFP is going out for collection agency, sewer amnesty program. We're working on city fee update. We're working on that. Proposed sewer rate increases. We're working on that. Future. As we relate to the goal number 1, we need to look at the model of service delivery for a fire, but we need to not do that in a silo. We need to work with our union. We need a fire union. We need to work with our department head of the fire department, and we've been doing that. And we'll continue to do that. Fire and police department review. Yes, we need to look at the police department because they are part of that pension liability that we have. And in conjunction with the police chief, we've been talking about ways we can address that. We're going to be dealing with that over the next year. And when we talk about, when we have the budget session next week regarding public safety, we'll get more into detail regarding those issues regarding police and fire. Review all leases, lease agreements. Thanks to the mayor, we got a pretty good lease agreement with the post office, which is unusual. We have maintained a flat rate, but we have increased that. So we need to look at ways we can improve in partnership with our partners, animal shelters, senior center, and also Seagull and others. In consideration of the sales tax audit, we have some businesses in town that are saying they're paying their fair share, others may not. We need to give consideration what we can do about that. Business attraction and retention. We can't cut ourselves out of this. We got to raise more revenue. Again, we'll talk more about all these things in July. Goal number 2, diversify the economy. It's built into the budget. It's how we can do that. Currently, we're doing some things. The Sonora Fest relationship building with the private real estate holders. I've contacted the owner of the Safeway Plaza. And literally, I'm reaching out to try to attract people to occupy some of those places and assisting her. She's 81 years of age, and she's really tired. In my role as function of community development director, I've been outreaching to her and working with her and coordinating activities with her, as well as the 1A owner of vacant land along Nyko Highway. There's a person who owns about 465 acres I've been in direct contact with about how I'm helping, assisting, marketing that property. Thanks to the leadership of the mayor and the council, we have an arts and culture district, entertainment district. As you know, the Hermosillo Sonora Business Trade Show I attended, 3,000 business owners. We had our audience, and some of them are interested in further conversations about being here in Bisbee. Currently, we've developed relationships with the mayor's office in economic development in San Diego. They have some of the best practices for international relations. As you know, they have the first memorandum of understanding in the country, cross-border memorandum of understanding with Tijuana. There's been great things that came about as a result of that. We have an opportunity, too, being a border community with Mexico, to further that. I've had an opportunity to visit high-tech incubators out there. They're known around the country for being the engineers, the forward thinkers and progressive in terms of high-tech incubators. We talked about that as being another way to diversify our economic base. We're currently working on that. Freeport, the Bisbee cohort, we talked about a welcome packet, target market analysis. Hopefully we can get them to fund that, although we did put that in a budget for funding. We can leverage other resources. We want to do that. Resurgence of the Board of Mayors Alliance, we're active participant in that. Me and the mayor will be in Cananea, I believe, next Friday. Currently, we're working. We've established relations in these areas. The governor's office is in Hermosillo, Sonora, Nyko, Cananea, and yours, Sonora. This is what we're currently doing. And we're also active participant in Governor Ducey's mega region. We're members of the Arizona-Mexico Commission. Goal 2, future. It is proposed community development director role, a community development position, mid-level. We'll talk more about that, I believe, in probably our 4th session. But as we talked about establishment of a business attraction and retention program, target market analysis, potential franchise attraction, potential big box retail, high-tech incubator, a film office, which we've budgeted, an exploration science center. This role of this person would be to make sure over the next 2 years these things happen. Also in the future, that person's role, establish Bisbee as a business-ready community. That means this, four areas that will qualify us as a business-ready community from my experience and best practices. Have an inventory of city-owned property available on hand for a developer. Have a unified voice, message we have to send to the business community that the council, planning commission, and planning and zoning and other boards and commissioners are on sync with what they like to see in their community. We have to get there. Review any planning and zoning ordinances to remove barriers to economic growth. Predictable development and site plan review process. It has to be established within our system. If someone comes to this office and they say, how long does it take you to review my site plan? I need to be able to tell them 48 hours. How long does it take you, city, for to have an inspection come to my building so I can open up my business? I can tell them 48 hours. We have to build that into our system. This is a principle or best practices when it comes to redevelopment of any community. Predictable development site plan review processes. Promotion of Warren District. There are some activities happening. Someone's bought the hotel. There's a fitness center going in, but we need to build on the things that are happening. Old Bisbee, we haven't forgot about Old Bisbee. We need to look at some of the older buildings and see about establishment of a commercial rehab program, the role, the community development director, to ensure that we do those things. Next, future, again, community development person, as it aligns with this goal that we've established. Explore medical tourism, event planning, possible shuttle, which was a great idea for the mayor, the observatory in Canaan, Sonora, and partners with the University of Arizona, astronomy department, restoration of Camp Newell, and we still need to move forward on this senior housing development. Goal three, and we're almost at the end. We have one more goal, and I'll be done. Recruit and attract young entrepreneurs and families to Bisbee. This will be the goal of the community development director and their role and expectations over the next 2 years to make these things happen. And currently, I'm working on a lot of these things. One, work with Bisbee Housing Trust, nonprofit, who would be involved with the acquisition and rehabilitation, and I want to make sure this is clear to the community because there's confusion, acquisition, rehabilitation of vacant, abandoned, dilapidated structures. And there's some in our community have been here over 30, 35 years. We don't deal with it. It just gets worse. We're going to have a workshop, work session to talk more about this in May 23rd, I believe it is. It'll be posted. The reopening of the Bisbee Pool. Thanks to the friends of the Bisbee Pool and creativity of Carrie, we've came up with a way to reopen that pool this year. Higgins Park restoration, Garfield Park restoration, collaboration with the Bisbee Unified School District, which is going to be proposed. Vista Park Health Pad and Vista Park restoration. Thanks to Councilwoman Councilwoman Hansen. We're working on that. These create the environment and the quality of life. She's looking like, I didn't know I was working on that. You said I am? But these are things that we're going to do to create a quality of life to attract entrepreneurs and families, and we're working on that right now. Next, another role of the community development director was to make sure we accomplish those things that I just identified in goal three. Goal four, the final goal. Currently, we had department head meetings weekly, and I'm sorry, department head meetings are biweekly, but our one-on-one meetings with our leadership team happens every week. One-on-one. It is an exchange of ideas and information between us. Department head meeting, semi-annual all-employee meetings. We've had two since I've been here. I'm talking about all employees. We've had two since I've been here in the city, and we'll continue to do that because it's important that we hear from our employees. And by the way, I've got a lot of great ideas from our team. Dwayne, you're here. You've given us a lot. You know what I'm saying is true, and I appreciate you. Also, improve working conditions at City Hall, and you've been working on that. That was a goal we identified. You've been doing that already. We appreciate that. Interim personnel director, it's been taking place right now. We've instituted the Employee of the Month program. Performance evaluations have been revamped and streamlined. And we reorganized the employee personnel and medical record files currently. These are other things we're doing as well. And this person here is doing three jobs as we speak. Future role of the personnel director. One is required by charter. Two, to fully implement these action strategies that we've identified in goals 1 through 3 and under goal 4. I'll just go quickly through this. Future goal of that person would be this. We'll get more into this when we talk about human resources, which is another work session, but I just wanted to highlight some of the things that you found in the budget. Okay. That's it. Now, thank you so much. Right now, we're going to turn it over to Pat Walker.
Technical difficulties here, so just bear with us. It was loaded, we tested it, and now it's not working.
Our city manager indicated he wasn't real good with that type of equipment.
You know what? I could have pushed the wrong button. Maybe I touched it again, it may work.
I think we blame it on him. That's
that's part of the mayor and council's job.
That's right.
You're used to it.
I see that Mr. Miller is with us still, so that's a good thing. Thank you.
Well, we talked about that, but not you in particular, which is how sustainability, you know, never can be a disease embrace. A lot of us have died off, you know, just look at it. You brought that up some time ago.
Success.
All right.
This one, then.
Will this be online available as presentation?
We can certainly make it online.
Yeah, the clerk has a copy of it. Sure. So. Okay. There we go. Okay, Mayor and members of the council, city staff, and members of the audience, thank you very much for inviting me back here to talk about the budget and specifically about the city of Bisbee. I was here before and we did a kind of a little bit of a budget 101. I'm going to talk about some of those things again because it's really pertinent now. You're in the midst of the budget season right now. In January, you were just starting the forecast and putting things together, and now it's coming before you, so it's really timely. Very aggressive strategic plan policies and strategies ahead, but things that are all really needed to maintain financial sustainability. And the one thing I'll mention that I noticed is sometimes it's hard to say, oh, well, we should spend money here and there, but sometimes you have to spend money to make money. And so with economic development, you have to look at the return on investment when you think of those things. What's really going to happen here if we spend money and go into it? So those are the kind of things we think about as we go through the budget and talk about it. Not that you have an easy job ahead of you, but these are all things to continue to think about. So what I'm going to cover is an introduction overview of Budget 101 a little bit. I'm going to talk about the baseline financial forecast starting with 2016 through 2021-22. And again, I like to show 16-17 because that gives you what the estimated results are. here we are, we're looking at what revenues are, you know, at least through February, and we're just estimating out the rest of the year, and Carrie's going to be going into that in her presentation. But I like to kind of show the aggregate results, and she'll get into more detail on it. And then 21-22 seems like a long time off, but when you're looking at fixing things along the way to maintain financial sustainability or achieve it, you got to get started, as the manager said, this summer. We'll then talk about the next steps and then open it up for any questions. So again, you're starting to see, when I talk about the purpose of budgeting, it's to meet organization strategic goals. That's what Richard just went over with you, is your strategic goals for the future, and what are some of those things? And I heard the financial sustainability, attract and retain businesses, attract and retain employees. These are all things that you want to do in order to meet strategic goals. And the bottom line at the end of the day is what services are going to be delivered to the citizen, and how much is it going to cost? And then pursue politically chosen goals for citizens. What that means in layman's terms is that the citizens have a voice into the process and what services they want to see. So these are the things that the elected official, from a policy standpoint, you know, move forward and put into a budget. It's also an internal control mechanism for planning and controlling operations. Think of your own life. If you don't put a budget together, it's easy to overspend. If you don't estimate out how much money you're going to take in and what your expenses are going to be, it's easy to go over. Same with the city or town. They need to have that budget in order to be able to monitor it and know it. Just because you have it in a budget doesn't mean you have it, though. Just like you can say, I'm going to make $10,000 more next year. If you don't, you're in trouble. You can't spend it then. Same way with cities and towns. You try to do conservative estimates, but realistic estimates. And I think that's what you're going to see in this year's budget. It is one of the most important activities undertaken by governments. And why? Because this is setting the roadmap for what your services you're going to deliver in the next year and things you're going to do that was just talked about in the strategies. And it's all touches finances. Everything just about does. Revenues must equal expenditures, thank goodness. The state of Arizona requires a balanced budget, and that's a good thing. As the federal government, I think, shouldn't have to require that, but that doesn't happen. You can go into a deficit. But bottom line, through all this, you can either add revenues at the end of the day, you can reduce expenditures, or you can do a combination of both. And, you know, it sounds simple on the surface, that's all we have to do. But it's really not simple because there's more needs than there are resources. I've never gone to a place where there's a lot more resources than needs. Never. So it's really hard to decide what activity am I going to put money towards the community development? Am I going to put money towards the pool? Am I going to put money towards public safety? What are we going to do? So it's a very, very hard decision. I teach budget classes at ASU. And one of the things I do is I do a budget exercise where I make all the students, and sometimes I have mayor and council attend some of my sessions at the league, and as well as city staff, and they have to decide what they're going to do. I give them a list of things. And after the exercise, they say, I never want to be a council member because it's hard. It's hard because they all, I set up a scenario. And I said, well, the parks needs this for this reason, and they're really good reasons, and public safety needs this for this reason. And they're going, but we don't have enough money. Yeah, it's hard. So I think it's a really good thing to go through when you start to think about it as a citizen, what has to happen at the end of the day, because they have to have a balanced budget one way or the other by the time they walk away. It's also a never-ending cycle. Everybody thinks, well, it's just budget season, and then we go back to doing what we were doing. No, it's never-ending. And as your city manager said, you're going to be starting the cycle again in July. You're going to be starting up, which I think is very prudent to do. You have a lot of things on the table to fix, and so you've got to have the time to investigate it, discuss it, and be able to put things in place. So you do start out with your projections, or preparation of the budget, which is what we've been doing over the last, you know, 4 or 5 months. Then you're going to be looking at an adoption, and you're going to be looking at a tentative budget adoption and then a final budget adoption. Then you're going to ask staff to implement it. Okay, all those things that you have in the budget, start implementing those now. You've got the money for this, for that, implement it, and make sure our citizens get the services. You then evaluate it every month. Everybody should be looking at their budget and their expenditures every month. Because, you know, if the revenues don't come in, all of a sudden, you got to cut back on expenditures. You also watch it so that if your revenues are going up in 1 year and you didn't appropriate the right amount, you can do it the next year. Unfortunately, that's not happened in Bisbee where you've had that problem. But there are some communities that maybe have been too conservative and had more money to spend the next year. So it's really a balance of that. And then the last thing is the audit. And the audit is by your third-party auditor, outside audit firm, that's required to do an audit and look at your financial statements and make sure that they fairly present the financial position of the city. That's what they do, and they offer what they call a qualified or unqualified or clean opinion. And you guys have a clean opinion, which is a good thing. Now, does that address, do auditors address the financial sustainability of an organization? No. Their job is just to present the information from the ledger to inform the citizens. And then guess what? By the time you're done with audit, you start all over again, and you start the preparation of the budget. Right, Carrie? So there's two sides to the equation, and the whole thing is to be able to balance these things. And you have the one side on the expenditure side where you have citizens' perceptions, again, as Richard mentioned about how people look through lens and they have their own experiences and things. Well, people have their own experiences with budget and what they think they need and services and everything else. There's a lot of stakeholder interest. There's the strategic vision. There's cost drivers that you have no control over. If an electric company raises their rates, that's something you can't control. PSPRS, wish you could control that, but you can't. So there's things that you can do to mitigate it in the future, but you can't stop it from happening. And I don't even know what the long-term solution will be for the state, but it's a big challenge for everyone. You're not alone if that makes you feel any better. A lot of communities are facing this. Bisbee's got a very, very high liability, though. We also look at economic conditions and government mandates, which always seem to come out. On the revenue side, guess what? We kind of look at the same things. We have to look at the economic conditions. We have to look at the changing tax base. Richard mentioned that you want to diversify your tax base. Absolutely. That's the thing that's going to sustain you in the long term. If you put all your eggs in one basket and that business or that type of business goes under, then you're in trouble. So that's why retention is just as important as attraction of new businesses. Citizen preferences, what's going on in the region, what's going on, you know, with Mexico and the relations there, and then some historical norms for the city of Bisbee. So the process starts by saying, what is our revenues going to be? You project out your revenues, and then you know how much money you have. And then you can say, okay, what are our expenses? And we talked about this last time. You have one time and ongoing. An ongoing expense would be like somebody's payroll. That's an ongoing thing that every year. A one-time expense might be a capital project that you do. So you want to match your ongoing revenues that you know are going to be coming in every year to pay the payroll. And you can use your one-time money. Let's say you get an insurance reimbursement settlement, which you guys did get last year, I think it was. Then that can go towards one time, because if you add bodies with that, you're going to be in trouble the next year. It's just like getting a bonus, going out and buying a new house, getting a mortgage, and then you can't afford it the next year because you used up your whole bonus. Same way here. So what are the components of a budget? Well, there's the operating budget and there's a capital budget. The operating budget identifies both revenue and expenditures. It's got all the traditional line items like personnel cost and operation and maintenance and that, you know, utilities, that sort of thing. And it could have program and performance components with it in the operating budget. In other words, what do we want to achieve by this budget? What's our service level going to be and how well are we doing it? And then again, as I mentioned, should identify ongoing versus one-time expenditures. In the state of Arizona, there's only two funds that are required by law. It's the general fund and a HRF fund, which is a special revenue fund, and I'll go into more detail on that. The others are for control purposes and tracking purposes, so that's why you develop other funds, and all other cities have other funds. You're not unusual. You do. It's just how many other funds you need to have, depending on your community. The general fund, the revenues that come into the general fund, it's usually the largest fund, and it can be used for any municipal purpose. It contains the most departments, whether you're the state, county, city, or town. The general fund contains the most departments. It's got your public safety in it. It's got your administration in it, your city clerk. It's got all the general government ones. The only ones that it wouldn't is what we'll get into, which is enterprise, the water, the sewer, the sewer and the airport, things like that. So where the money comes from? Well, this is just an example. This is not Bisbee. This is an example of what the average is for most communities in Arizona. 41% of their budget is made up of sales tax, 25% state shared revenues. Other revenues, which could be anything from park fees to building permit fees, is about 18%. And then the fund balance is about 16% of the total. So sales taxes. Local sales taxes are made up of different categories. And so when you go into a store, you go into a grocery store, or you go into a Walmart, let's say, and you buy something, that's a retail tax. And you can charge it on food if you're a grocery store or not, but it's a retail tax. There's a construction sales tax, and I look at this more as one-time money, because when a construction project comes in, like when I worked for the city of Chandler, we had Intel come in. And guess what happened when they came in with the construction sales tax? We were all cheering. You know, it was a big, big, you're talking billion-dollar fab. But we knew we could not take that money and then go add a bunch of bodies and everything else. We knew we had to invest that some way. And so what the city did was they reinvested it back because they had the regional mall. They were able to pay off the debt on the regional mall for Westcor and be able to get more money in the long term. So those are kind of some of the strategic decisions you can make with one-time money. Utilities, that's the one that's the most sustainable because everybody gets utilities and they pay the tax on the utilities. There's rental tax that can be collected on residential rental, and then, of course, restaurant and bar, hotel, motel. There's a lot of different categories that can be collected. When you're looking at sales tax forecasting, you need to be careful because there are seasonal fluctuations. The Christmas season, you really don't get those revenues until February because you collect it in December, they have to pay it by the end of January, and then the cities and towns get it in February. So you have to consider those things, and when you're looking at projecting and forecasting, you don't want to take that blip and then say it's going to continue that way all the way out. So you have to be conservative. And then you look at the CPI, you look at consumer confidence, what's going on, are people spending in Bisbee, is there newer expanding businesses, are businesses closing? And then, of course, if there's any tax law changes, it may affect the revenue streams. Construction sales tax, when you're estimating it, good things to use is your engineering news record for construction, the Western region, again, one-time versus ongoing, housing market, mortgage rates, all those things go into a forecast. Hotel, motel, restaurant, and bar. And again, it's the overall economy, and if you're a tourist attraction, which Bisbee is, you know, how does that fit? What's your busiest months? What fluctuations do we need? And again, with hotel, motel, it's based on the number of rooms, the rate, and then the vacancy factors. And you figure that in when you look at it, and then any new businesses. Utilities, you want to look at proposed rate increases. You want to look at if you're going to add more people that are going to pay a utility tax in, that's going to get an electric bill or a water or sewer bill. You look at the weather, too, because unfortunately when it's really rainy and wet, then your water revenues go down, which in turn for Bisbee would mean their sewer revenues might go down. So you have to look at some of the weather considerations when you're doing forecasting. Franchise taxes, this is for permission for utilities to use the city or town's right-of-way for underground lines. This is something that after the 25-year agreement expires, because it can go up to 25 years, you have to go back to the vote of the people to get the agreement approved. But it's usually based on a percentage of the gross sales, about like 2%, and this is just a couple examples up around the metro area, Phoenix, the APS, Southwest gas for franchise. Property taxes. There's two types of property taxes in the state of Arizona. And probably Richard had a little culture shock when he saw what we can do in Arizona with property taxes. Not much, because in the East and the Midwest, you can use it for ongoing operation and maintenance. We're limited in Arizona. There's the primary property tax, which has got a maximum allowable levy, which is only 2% increase a year, plus any new construction. So it doesn't go up very much. And if your assessed values in your community go down, it can go down. So, you know, again, primary taxes is very little of the overall. What can be levied is a secondary property tax rate. But the state of Arizona says the only use that you can have for a secondary property tax is to pay back debt service, which is your principal and interest, like your mortgage, on any bonds that you would sell for, like, infrastructure, for long-term type projects and things like that. You can levy a secondary rate to pay that back. The city of Bisbee doesn't have a secondary property tax levy. You have a primary. And if you were to get a secondary, you would have to go out to the voters and ask for voter authorization to be able to sell the bonds. And then even after the voters authorize, and that doesn't mean they're going to sell them all, you look at 3 to 5 years, and then you time it according to what you can afford, because guess what? When you build something, there's always operation and maintenance that goes with it. So you have to be careful on that. State shared revenues in the state of Arizona, There's the ability to for cities and towns to get state shared revenues based on a formula of your population and how fast it's growing in comparison to other populations. So what that means is you might grow and still get lower state shared revenues the next year if somebody grew faster than you, because there's one pie and you share, and it goes up and down. Recently, there were 6 municipalities that went out for a mid-decade census, and they all ended up getting increases because they wanted to make sure that the population was counted. They got increases. Well, guess what? The pie was the same. So that meant that some communities got decreases, and not very bad because it went up, too, a little bit. So it kind of offset the decreases. Could be a lot worse. But you always got to be on top of that for the future, because if your population isn't going to grow as fast, you may see those decline. Luckily, this next year, you're going to see in the budget, they are increasing. They're not declining. So that's a good sign. So their state-shared sales tax, they collect a state sales tax, and then they put it into the pot and share it based on that formula I talked about. There's income tax, which is from the income tax that was collected 2 years ago. So it's a pretty good estimate because it's from 2 years ago. There's the Autoloo tax, which is the vehicle license tax that you pay. When you go in and have to get your license plates renewed, there's a vehicle license tax on the value of your car. They share that with cities and towns. And then the last thing is, and we'll get into it with special revenue funds, is the highway user fund. This is what we call the gasoline tax. And it's based on the number of gallons sold, and it's a very complex formula with population and in what county it was sold in, your county compared to other counties. It's a really long formula, but at the end of the day, it's based on price per gallon. It's not based on a percentage of the price of gas. So in other words, if gas goes, prices go up, usually the gas usage goes down, so you lose money. But when the price goes down, you get more because people buy more gallons. They quit traveling. They quit getting on the road. So that's a different formula than a lot of people think it works. And then we talked about income taxes. Other revenues, building permits, fines and forfeitures, recreation park fee, libraries, those all are in the general fund that all go to it. The difference is that these type of revenues, the building permits, recreation park fees, and library fees, just cover the cost. Because you're not, if you charge more than what it costs, that's called a tax. So fees are to cover cost, and that's what they do. And sometimes they don't cover the cost. I don't know of a pool fee anywhere that covers the cost of a pool. And so, but you can't charge more than the cost would be. You can charge less, and that's a quality of life decision that policymakers make. Do we want to have that park, even though we know we're not getting money for it? Do we want to have that that pool open? And those are the decisions you have to make. Interfund transfers. These are the transfers that come in from police special revenue, wastewater, sanitation, and Queen Mine Fund. And the thought process behind interfund transfers is that it's can be partially a cost allocation formula. If you think about a business, if they had to go out and the wastewater and sanitation was a private industry and had to go out and get their payroll done and have legal look at their stuff and have HR run their payroll and accounting do their books, there would be a cost that they would have to pay as a business. So what they're doing is paying back the general fund for a lot of the costs that are in the general fund. So that's what a big portion of that is. Okay, fund balances. And I really wanted to spend some time on this, so bear with me. And if you don't understand by the time I'm done, please ask me, because I don't want to move on to the next one. This is really, really important, because one of the things I want to talk about is the difference between fund balance and cash. That's a really important point. What it is, and liken it to your own savings account. You start out with some money in your savings account. You add in revenues during the year. You subtract out your expenditures. At the end of the day, you either got more revenues than what you anticipated, so maybe, and you spent the expenditures you anticipated, well, you'll increase your fund balance. If you do the opposite, where you don't take in as much revenue but you have more expense, you're going to decrease your fund balance. They call it a rainy day fund, a contingency fund. You're going to find by the time I'm done with this presentation, fund balance, contingency reserve can be synonymous. So we'll talk about that. One's appropriated, one's not appropriated. Okay, so for example, the town started out with $2 million, added revenues, subtracted out expenditures, they come up with a fund balance, which could be a positive or it could be a deficit. So what's the difference between cash and fund balance? And I just want to walk you through a very, very simplistic example. So at the beginning of the year, you have $1,000 in your savings account. You're paid on a monthly basis, so you add $1,000 for that month. So you have $2,000 now, right? But you have to pay your house payment, other bills for the month, and use up the $1,000. But your fund balance is still $1,000. Your savings account is still $1,000 because you just paid everything. However, all of a sudden your car breaks down, and you need to spend $500 to fix it. So you go to your fund balance slash savings account, and it goes down to $500. But the next month, you make your $1,000 in pay. Your electricity bill went down by $500, so your expenses are $500. So you go back up to $1,000. So my whole point is, it's a point in time. All of the funds come into one checking account, which is normal, into an operating account. And then it's distributed through your what we call your general ledger, your financial statements, to the various funds. But there's a cash flow for a while. You might get in more wastewater funds. You may get in more of these type of funds, and you use the cash. But at the end of the year, if you start out with your fund balance, your savings account, and you take in the revenues you said you would and expenditures you said you would, there's no change in fund balance then. If it's $1,000 revenue, $1,000 expense, no change in fund balance. However, like I said, if revenues don't come in that way and they're short, your fund balance goes down. If your revenues go above what you said, it will go up, and vice versa with the expenditures. So at the end of the day, it's just a cash flow issue from time to time. So if you pull out the checking account on a given day, the June 30th fund balance becomes the July 1. Remember, the fiscal year is July 1 through June 30th. So June 30th is really July 1 of 2016 fund balance. Okay? And so what happens in one month versus the next month isn't really relevant as it is overall the length of the whole year when you look at it. Does that make sense? Okay.
Can anyone stop you to have, they have questions from your presentation?
Yep. Yep. I want them to, because, like I said, this one is really important. And I want to talk about BSBY's fund balance. BSBY started fiscal year 17 with approximately $2 million that include about $500K in receivables, primarily the ambulance. So when you add up the cash, you add up the investments that you have in your LGIP fund, your local government investment pool with the state treasurer, when you add up your receivables, which you had some strong receivables that were received, which was the state shared revenues, and then you had some other receivables, which could be for probably the majority was ambulance. But I'm saying even if you say we're only going to get half those receivables in, let's say that you don't get the other half in, you had about $1.8 million in general fund balance starting in fiscal year 17. In fiscal year 17, the town will end up approximately the same with exception of receivable, may change to some degree. So if you recognize your revenues, you realize the revenues you budgeted, which I'll get into a little bit more here, which you did overall, but you did have some go down and some go up on a line item, but you overspent, you still spent your budget plus a little bit more, then you're going to see a change in your fund balance. And if all of a sudden those receivables are, hey, we're not going to collect even $200,000 of that receivable, that would change your fund balance then, because it's assuming you're going to get that money in this year. And if it doesn't, then it goes down. But that's why you monitor your fund balance, but it's different than cash that comes in, okay? This is probably the hardest thing to explain to any council. And I talked to two audit firms, and I said, you got a better way to explain it? And one of them said, you know, I just explained that I'm the parent, and these are my kids that drain all my money all the time out of here, and then at the end of the year, I have to make it up at the end. I said, well, I don't know that that will work. I think that the $1,000 thing I hope works better, but it's probably true. He's right. The city exceeded general fund revenues by approximately, I'm sorry, expenditures, I should say, not a revenues, that expended $82,000 more than what you brought in revenues in fiscal year 17. And so what that meant is you had a $100,000 contingency reserve. In essence, you used up $82,000 of your contingency reserve. Okay? So special revenue funds, what are those? Well, it's just what it says. They're special. They're restricted. They can only be used for a specific purpose. Some examples of what you have is the Highway User Fund, your Visitor Center, your Donation Fund, Grants, Art Commission, Bus Fund. There's a lot of different funds you have that are for special purposes that you want to be able to track the money coming in and that it's being used for the purpose that it was going to be used. You said you were going to use it for. HERF is very restrictive because you can only use it on street projects, and there's very strict statutes regarding that you can't use it for general fund expenditures or anything like that. So that's why there's a separate audit report done on your HERF fund every year by your auditors to assure the public and the auditor general that you're not doing that. Capital project funds. I don't think the city of Bisbee has a capital improvement plan, do you, Richard, yet?
Yeah. We do have one.
Okay. So it's something that you want to look at multi-year. And again, with the financial forecasting, that might be something that you want to look at down the road. How does that fit into it? Because there is an operating impact of your CIP. And you can finance by pay-as-you-go, grants, or borrowing. And some of the ways the sources are, as I mentioned, bonds, something called impact fees. I don't know that you guys have it. You don't have any impact fees.
No.
Grants, and then you can just use it from cash or what we call current revenues. When I looked at your capital project fund, you had a budget of about $816,000. Now, that didn't mean you had the money to spend. That meant you had a budget of $816,000. For fiscal year 18, it's $55,000 for a vehicle. The thing that concerns me as we talk about all these things is that your repair and maintenance costs are going to increase if you're hanging on to vehicles and equipment longer than you should. So, you know, you have to look at, do we have a repair and replacement fund? Do we have infrastructure and facilities that may deteriorate if we don't stay up on the maintenance? What are those? So those are things that all need to be looked at, and you can look at through a capital project plan that you do, which is usually 5 years out. Debt service, as I mentioned, you have debt service for principal and interest on bonds. And what the City of Bisbee has is what we call the WIFA bonds for the sewer projects, and USDA you have, and then you've got some leases on some vehicles, I think a garbage truck and some police vehicles that you have. So you have what we call a lease purchase. But you can also sell revenue bonds for utilities and pledge the utilities to pay it back. And, you know, again, if you're going to go to the market with any bonds, you have to be able to show you can pay it back and what your coverage ratios are on that. So enterprise funds. Enterprise funds, and again, it was mentioned in strategic planning, it's like a business. It needs to be self-supporting because the theory behind it is that when you take the revenues and you subtract out the operation and maintenance cost, maybe a capital replacement reserve, maybe a contingency reserve, and then a debt service payment, you should be able to charge whatever that fee is to do that. If you're not, then that can be an issue. So you have to figure out a way to do it, but it should. They're getting a service for it. They're getting, you know, wastewater for it. They're getting, you know, airport services, whatever it is. Right now, the enterprise funds that you have the Queen Mine, which I don't have up there. You have sewer, and you don't have ambulance, okay? And the reason is it's in the general fund. But again, I think I talked to you last time. That might be something in the future that you want to look at because you really don't know what the true cost is on that. Expenditures, that's the finance director during the budget. That's my favorite slide because I felt like that many, many years. Expenditure limitation. What the state of Arizona has is because somebody back in 1979-80 must have overspent what they had, and they got their city or town into a deficit. So the legislators came back and said, well, we're going to form a state expenditure limitation. And once we give that to you, it will be based on whatever revenues you took in 79-80 plus an inflationary factor, and then that's all you can spend. Well, the very next year they came back with some different legislation because they quickly understood that, hey, that doesn't work for all communities because if all of a sudden you didn't have impact fees and you implemented them, you can't spend that money. Even though you're taking the money in, you can't spend it. Your city grows and it's higher than your implicit GDP inflator is, then all of a sudden these cities or towns couldn't spend the money that they were bringing in to serve their citizens. So they developed what they call alternatives. And Bisbee's under one of those alternatives. It's called the home rule option, which means it's local control. The budget is only can be spent that's adopted by council each year. So your revenues equal your expenditures. There's other things like a permanent base adjustment you can do, and you never want to get to a one-time override because what that means is that You went out for an election, home rule, it failed, so you have to do a one-time override, and you have to do it for 2 years. So that's something you never want to have to do. There are communities that had to do that this last year. There's different budgeting processes. I'm not going to go into all these, but there's different ways you can do it. The city of Bisbee has what we call incremental. They look at the base budgets of the departments, they meet with them, they discuss what's in the line items, they talk about what they need to be able to continue the services they're delivering for next year. And so they look at an incremental and a line item budget. So they do it by control it, they appropriate it by line item, but they still do an incremental approach. You don't start from zero. That was during Jimmy Carter's era, and that's very labor intensive. You can, for certain departments, you might want to do that at certain times, but if you did that every budget year, you'd never get a budget done, I'm afraid. Preparation of requests. This is the second step in the process after you know what the revenues are. You look at the council vision and goals, you look at the fiscal picture, and then you give everybody instructions and like, what are some of the things that you need to tell me to justify your budget, and give me cost estimates so that I can do it. That's what they did with Carrie and with Richard. I'm getting warm in here. Is it warm for anybody else? Maybe it's because I'm moving around so much. I don't know. Contingency reserve, fund balance is as I mentioned, is an unappropriated contingency reserve or rainy day reserve. And really, you should have that rainy day fund in all funds. There's no reason you shouldn't have that in HERF. There's no reason you shouldn't have it in sewer. I mean, things happen. Unexpected emergencies that happen or revenue shortfalls in any of those funds could cause you to need a contingency reserve. GFOA, which is the Government Finance Officers Association International, recommends for the general fund at least 2 months of expenditures. Based on your fiscal year 18 proposed budget, Bisbee spends, if it's level, which we know it's not, that's cash flow issue, $128,982 a week. Your contingency reserve is $100,000. So you don't even have 1 week covered by your contingency reserve. And think about that. I think that's important because would you want to be in that position with your own personal finances where you didn't even know if you had 1 week in your savings account of that? Now, you do have fund balance, and this is where contingency reserve becomes synonymous with fund balance. If you need to appropriate for 2 months, which is the recommended GFOA, at the 8 weeks, you would need to appropriate $1,031,000, and that's 15% of your operating expenditures. 4 months would be $2,063,872. Your estimated fiscal year 17 fund balance is 1.7. That's because we started out with the 1.8. Remember I told you about, you know, there was a little bit that was used of the contingency reserve. So we'll get to that chart on the financial forecast, but I wanted you to keep that in mind. So under Arizona state law, you're appropriating $100,000, and you're under the home rule. If you needed to spend $500,000, even though you might have 1.7 in the bank, you can't, because you didn't appropriate it. Under home rule, you have to appropriate everything. So I think that's an important point as you go through these things of what do you want that reserve to be. If you have it, appropriate it. If it doesn't come in, you don't spend it. That's why you monitor your budget. If you think you're going to have $1.7 million and it comes in when you do your audit at $1.5 million, well, you already know you got $200,000 in that reserve you can't spend because it never came in. So that's the purpose of really looking at your fund balance and then appropriating a contingency reserve. So is there conflict with that? You bet. Again, request versus available resources, advocates versus guardians, advocates of people that want to spend, guardians of the money that want to maintain fiscal sustainability and don't understand the differences there. Because, again, you know, when your street is tore up and you can't get out of your driveway, it may not make sense to you to put money aside for reserve. But it does in the long term. That's what's going to give you financial sustainability in bad times. And it also, if you ever want to borrow any money, you need to have those things in place. So let's talk about some of the things that are impacting the budget. The CPI in January was at 2.5%, about hanging around there. Economy is improving. Gas prices are increasing, though, so is utilities. And then we've got that big elephant in the room, the PSPRS liability, which, as you know, increased your budget by about $300,000 between PSPRS and Arizona State Retirement System this last year. So why do you do a financial forecast? Well, again, we've talked about we don't want to just look at 1 year. We want to look at the long-term plan to sustain the town's financial condition or city's financial position. It's so you avoid structural deficits. And what's a structural deficit? As I explained at the beginning, using one-time money for ongoing expenditures. And then all of a sudden, you don't have enough revenues to cover your expenditures. That becomes what we call a structural deficit or a gap. So you set goals and strategies to achieve them, which is what you've done in your strategic planning. You evaluate the impact of policy decisions on future health. And then you take the action to make it happen, and you implement policies for that. Again, a financial forecast is not in stone. It doesn't mean that's the way it has to be for the next 5 years. As we know, things change. Laws change. Economy change. There's a lot of things that change. But it is something that you get an agreement between council members on how you're going to move forward with that data that you know today, and it's going to be for a projection for the future. And order to be able to maintain the quality of services to citizens. If not, then you need to be able to communicate to the citizens your service levels are going down. And this is why, because we can't afford to do it at this level anymore. It's down. So let's back up and talk about the financial forecast that I did for you in January. And this was it. It's pretty tiny. But the bottom line is that you saw a lot of red there. And there's two factors here. One, the revenues came in higher than what we anticipated. And expenditures came in a lot lower than we anticipated. Part of the reason was an accounting issue with how you treated $703,000 of a 1% sales tax. You used to take it in the general fund, transfer it to the HERF fund, and the auditor said, hey, just put it in the HERF fund, don't do the transfer. But the expenditure was built into the budget. And as we talked at the January session, we just took the expenditure budget and assumed it was all going to be spent. And I think I mentioned at that time, these are all going to change by the time we come back. So I guess the good news is they did all change, okay? The revenues increased by about 7.4%, but primarily because of transfers in that increased by $383,000. So out of the total amount of the increase, and it was about $800,000, there was about $400,000 that was because of transfers in that increased. Taking those out and say, let's not count that increase for transfers in because that comes from other funds, your revenues went up by 1.4% from the prior year. Your expenditures went up by 4.5% than the prior year. Okay? And really, when you look at how much your PSPRS and ASRS went up, that means you cut places to get there. So based on this assumption, and I had to use some assumption, and I'm saying, what if we're looking at the fiscal year 18 budget, and what if we just grow at 1.4% on revenue, like we did this last year, and we still continue to grow at 4.5%, which is probably low, what does your financial forecast look like? And that's what this is. And I want to say here, this only includes $100,000 of your reserve that you have in the 17-18 budget. It has no reserves built in. Now, do you have reserves on that green line, the ending fund balance? Absolutely. But look where it goes by 21-22. You're down to $27,000.
I can't see that. Can you go over the numbers for me, please? Maybe it's my eyes.
No, it's kind of small. I probably should have printed these out. Hopefully online people can blow it up, too, when they look at it. Okay. The revenues for 16-17 are at $6,338,530 for the general fund. And again, this is going to tie into Carrie's presentation. The departmental expenditures are $6,422,47. And so you can see that you overspent by $81,716, okay? So you used up your appropriation for your contingency reserve, basically, is what you did. I put an estimated fund balance of $1,008,000 to start with. As I mentioned, I didn't include all the receivables in there. And I put an ending fund balance of about $1.7 because you used up some of your fund balance with your contingency reserve. I then looked at, okay, 17-18. Carrie did the revenue projections for 17-18. And it was $6,807,571. In order to create a balanced budget, and they went through and met with all the departments and everything, they proposed a budget of $6,707,571 plus $100,000 in contingency reserve. As a result, you can see that if you don't spend your contingency reserve, you'll have $100,000 at the end of the day. So you've got your fund balance there that really kind of increases because it you didn't take away that $100,000 and spend it. These are all assumptions. So you can see that your fund balance goes from 1.7 to 1.8. If you don't spend your contingency reserve, it goes down to 1.7, 1.3, 829, because you've got a structural deficit. Look up here to, do I have a pointer in here? Mm-hmm. Which one is it, though? Oh, that one it. Oh, that's another one. Okay. So the thing is, right here, you look at your revenues and you look at your expenses, and I have no contingency reserve in there. You're overspending. If you get a 1.4% increase in revenues and you're spending 4.5, of course, you're going to spend more than you take in. The percentages just aren't there. So that's making that assumption. Now, can I do a million other assumptions? You bet. You know, gee, Pat, what if we say we're going to increase our economic development and add businesses? What will that do to the picture? But what if the PSPRS comes in again at this high rate? What's that going to do to the picture? You can do a million different scenarios on financial forecasting. But at the end of the day, you've got to come up with some assumptions that you kind of all agree on and start working towards. And so this is the best assumptions we have at this time, okay, is that that's based on history. Without dissecting every single revenue and dissecting every expense, which might be the way you have to go, you know, long term, this is what it looks like. But this next slide is the one that I want to bring your attention to. Here you have, and I'll read you the numbers. For 16-17, of course the numbers don't change. For 17-18, you can see the thing that's changing is I put in $1,031,936 in contingency reserve to meet the 15%. And with that, that leaves you $786,348 in fund balance. The next one that I show is, and we'll talk about this during the policy, well, if your expenditures go up by 4.5%, you've got to replenish, you've got to add to your contingency reserve to meet it. And that's assuming you don't spend any of it. This is all assuming you're not spending it. You're just replenishing it to match the expenditures going up. So even with that, you're looking at 106,000 in 2018-19, 106,535 of expenditures over budget. You're draining your fund balance to the point of you really run out here. You run out here if you're going to do your contingency reserve the right way. Now, mind you, that doesn't include a replacement reserve. It doesn't include capital expenditures. It doesn't include, you know, a lot of different things. So, again, I think that you really need to look at this, and this is what we want to avoid. And as I mentioned in the very beginning, how do you avoid it? Well, you raise revenues, reduce expense, or do a combination. That's really what your job is to do. So the last thing I wanted to talk about, and I'll turn it over to Carrie, is financial policies. And one of the things that I have noticed about cities that have turned around, and I'll tell you, it really worked for Chandler. Chandler's very sustainable, financially sustainable. I went over, I helped Glendale. I've helped Youngtown. I've helped Kearney. I've helped big and large cities write financial policies. And why is it important? Well, it really sets the standards and the guidelines for strong financial management over your city resources. And if you don't have policies to follow, you can drift and you change. Then it's not really a policy if you're not following it. So as a body, what Richard wanted me to do is bring forward some. And there's 8 types of financial policies. And the Government Finance Officers Association, which govern all the finance people in the country, in Canada, came up with some recommendations of type of policies that you should have, and there's 8 different types. In discussions with Richard, it'd be very aggressive to try to do all 8 types this budget year. We are going to try to do 3, though. They are operating policy reserves, capital policy reserves, management, operating management, capital management, reserve requirements, contingency reserves, rainy day fund, debt management, long-range financial planning, grant management, investment management, accounting, auditing, and financial reporting. What we're recommending is 3. And you should all have in front of you financial policies. Right here. No, they got them. You all have them in front of you. And I'm not going to sit here and read this to you. But I just want to highlight a few things, because the whole purpose will be for you to look at this. You're not adopting them tonight. You're just reviewing them, okay? And what we have here is under the financial policies that you're going to be considering adopting operating management, reserves, and long-range financial planning. On an operating management policy, it's just good sense, but you're putting in a writing and you're really kind of giving a policy for staff. So on that first page where you see operating management policy, they talk about the length, the scope and length of the budget period. Establishing, it's July 1. Seems pretty common sense, but sometimes people need to see that in writing, that that's our budget time. What's our balanced budget definition? You know, this kind of tells the public, too. This is what we abide by. We have a balanced budget. And guess what? It's per Arizona State statute. The basis of budget. We're abiding by what they call governmental accounting standards, accounting principles, generally accepted accounting principles. It's referred to as GAAP. You have to. That's why you get your audit done. And so your budget has to kind of match those principles. Cost allocation, we talked about that. That you're going to look at that from time to time on, you know, what, how much money are you taking from these funds and putting into the general fund. You're going to look at that. Long-term financial forecast, you're doing that right now. Then it goes on and gets into more detail about budget amendments, how you handle those. Because if you exceed your budget, you have to come back to council to get approval. So they'll be coming back to you. If they truly do have to use $82,000 in your contingency reserve, that'll come back to council and tell you where, you know, they went over and what they need to fix. And then again, budget links to strategic financial planning. You have already done that. You're saying we're going to make our budget linked to our strategic planning. It makes sense. So this is, becomes part of the policy. Revenues, you're going to look at one-time versus ongoing in the future. That, you know, dissecting a little bit more, but going by these policies. You're going to look at your user fees. I already saw that up there. You're going to look at that and see that your fees are covering the cost. Expenditures. Departments are encouraged to periodically review operations for efficiencies and reallocate existing expenditure appropriation before requesting new funding. That's a good policy to have. Hey, department, look at what you have, and maybe there you can come in and you want this, but you say, hey, I can save on this. I mean, those, that's a good policy to adopt and for all department staff to embrace. And I think they have. I think that they, that's why you had the meetings, I think, Richard, with all these departments, is to hear them and get their ideas so that you can reallocate the resources. Reserve policy. This is an important one, because your reserve policy goes along with your fund balance policy as well as your reserve, your contingency reserve. Remember, you can have a bigger amount in your reserve, your fund balance, and you may not appropriate it all, which is fine if you don't need it. But you're not going to be able to spend it then, and if there's an emergency. So you have to look at how much are we going to do, and if the guidelines are for 2 months worth of expenditures, which still isn't a whole lot, that's going to be your $1 million. That's 15%. And if you look around and you say, well, this city or town only has, you know, 5%, look a little closer, because there's different lines they call them. They call them the economic reserve, development reserve. They call them the revenue stabilization reserve. They call it all different names. You got to add them all together. They're all reserves, but they're dedicated reserves by council. Like the council may choose, we want to reserve out of that fund balance so much for this. But they also have a contingency reserve that can be used for any emergency. Now the bad news about the other funds, and I said that, you know, you probably aren't going to be aggressive enough. Those are things that you want to do in the future. But if you're going to have a utility fund that has more fluctuations than the general fund, you want a higher contingency reserve. So usually they recommend 20 to 25%, because if those don't come in, then you need a bigger reserve. Could things go wrong in the wastewater? Yes. And then you have no reserve to go to. So, again, this is something of a policy that you can work towards, but you adopt it as a policy body, and this becomes part of your budget document then. So these things are going to be proposed as Richard and Carrie go through the budget, and then I think for the future they're going to work towards some of these other policies. And you know what? Glendale, you read about Glendale. You saw how bad of shape. Their finance director came in, worked and revamped all those policies, and guess what? They're on the road to being in the black. He did a really good presentation to League about where they've been and where they're going now, and it's really a different story than where they were before. So I think it helps. So with that, let me see what else I have. Next steps. Well, the next steps is Carrie and Richard and departments going through all their budgets, and as you say, the tentative budget approval, and then really where the work starts for a lot of this is July when you do it. So it's starting with the budget tonight, but it's really going to get heated up come July, I think. Don't you, Richard?
Yes.
Before. Before. So with that, I'll open it up to any questions anybody would have.
I have a question.
Mayor?
Oh, did she call on you first?
I hate to go
before you. Okay, I am still confused about the contingency fund.
Okay.
I understand, you know, being 15%, but if your total reserve or contingency or total balance, fund balance, is one, you know, let's say it's $1 million, and that 15%, or even if you're going to allocate that $1 million, to me it looks like you're balancing the budget based on using those reserves. I mean, how can you not use those if you're balancing the budget? I don't. It never made sense to me to do that, and I still don't understand it.
Okay, Mayor, if I can, Councilmember Hansen, the thing is that you put a line item in, just like you put in $100,000 for contingency reserve. It's
right.
Not identified with any cost center or anything. It's a reserve. So if you've got $100,000 in fund balance from the prior year, you appropriate on the revenue side. I'm carrying forward $100,000 of fund balance. And so my expenditure is $100,000 in contingency reserve. Doesn't mean you have to spend it. And guess what? If you do, you have to come back to council and ask for permission to do it. So whether that's $100,000...
Okay, it's on both sides of
yes,
the...
Yes,
okay.
It's both sides of the equation.
Thank you. That was so simple.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I understand it now.
Mayor, this...
Yeah, it was anybody but...
Oh.
I'm kidding. Mr. Reese.
Pat, I appreciate all this work. And I appreciate what you've done. Chairman, one of the best known cities on the planet. We have Intel. We don't have Intel.
Right.
And you had a tremendous population of office charges.
Mm-hmm.
We've had decreased population. Still, there's no credible evidence that it's stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So when I looked at this work that you did in January and saw these numbers, they were shocking.
I know.
Shocking.
Yes.
And then when I see these, you know, is there reason to believe there's some encouragement here? Seems to be Richard's comment about the truth and where we're really at and how we're going to figure out the buildings. That's what I don't get.
Okay.
See, when it went on this negative fund balance of almost $500,000 in 17-18, and came out here this $4 million under this scenario, if then what you're presenting here represents only 1.4% growth in revenue, I don't remember the numbers.
Okay.
But I don't understand how such a small turns it around, or maybe I'm not understanding, because I think in terms of cash flow,
yes,
that's how I think. So the question is, next year after, and then going out to, I think where you love it, 27,000 after, you suggested that if revenues stay the same or grow by 1.4%, we pay our bills.
Mayor?
Yes, please.
Sorry.
And I also noticed when...
Well, let's get one at a time.
Well, I just want to add to that, and I noticed in the current budget, there's no number for retirement systems. So I don't understand where we're at, but how do we pay our bills? How's that done?
Okay, well, Mr. Reese, your first question to her was, does that allow us to pay our bills? So let's get that one.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate that.
Okay. Mayor, let me answer it starting out with, One of the things that Richard is very adamant about, and transparency, is that's why we have that January schedule in there, because we wanted to explain what happened in January versus then. Not that it was a mistake. The assumptions were different at that time. The assumptions were that there was $703,000 that was going to have to be paid to the HERF fund because the sales tax came in the general fund. It was a counting switch. So the $703,000, right off the bat, when you look at $703,000 a year on the expenditure side, that's what drove most of that. The other thing that changed since January is that we went in and we looked at the revenues closer. We only had through like November or December when we came in January. We now have more revenue information to be fine-tune our estimates. And I did say that in the January session. I also said the expenditures are just the full budget. We're probably not going to come in on the full budget. And we didn't. Our expenditures are, if you look at it, in January, I think we said 7.4 and they're 6.4 now. So they cut off a lot of the expenditure side. 703 was because of that transfer. So these are the things that why you do projections. There's like the good and bad projections. You do it and people get hung up on numbers. And that's why I always say these are projections. These are assumptions. Don't get hung up on it. So that was a projection. So that explains the January till now. So let's talk about our bills. I'm showing that in 18-19, you're not paying for all your bills. I'm showing you're using your savings account to pay your bills. Is what I'm showing.
Is there money in the savings?
Yes, there is. There's fund balance. And that's why I started out with the whole $1.8 million in the very beginning, and I talked about, well, that could go up or down depending on what happens the rest of the fiscal year, but let's just say that ballpark estimate. And then you add in, if you take in all the revenues you say you are, and you expend what you say you are, and the way I projected in 18, what Carrie built, she balanced it. Okay? And part of the balancing was from transfers from other funds in for interfund transfers. Part of it was revenue increase. State shared revenues went up. She'll be talking about that. It's not a huge bump, but you add up a little bit all over the place and you can meet it. So the bottom line is that you are borrowing from your savings account, and that's the structural deficit I was talking about, is that you don't want to be in that position. Then you add to that, if you want to build a contingency reserve, that even gets worse. So, Okay. What it is that, again, these are projections, and all I said was if your revenues increase by 1.4% and your expenditures increase by 4.5%, this is the picture it's going to look like for the next 5 years. The thing is, if you go out and you get an audit done and you collect more revenues, the reason you have audits or you have collection agencies is get people to comply. And so once they start paying whatever fees or taxes, hopefully you'll beat that 1.4%. Things like that that the council decides to do will affect the revenue side. If you bring in a business, it'll affect. The purpose of this is to say, hey, you're going to have a problem in 18-19 if you don't, you're going to be using your savings account. Yeah, you can use your savings account, but then you're going to run out at some point. So all this is saying is your revenues are not growing at the pace of your expenditures. So council and citizens, what are we going to do to fix that over the next 4 years? So you can either raise revenues by all those programs you talked about or look at cutting expenditures or combination. And that's what council's going to be looking at.
So the retirement number, yes, mm-hmm. on the line item, that's increasing.
Sure. It is on the line item.
So that number is growing, mm-hmm. but if we miss it, 1.4% of revenue. How those bills get paid?
Well, that's the problem. It's just like your own personal finances. If you're not getting raises every year and your bills are going up, what are you going to do? Well, you're going to borrow from your savings account, or you're going to have to go to get a loan, or you're going to have to cut expenditures. Maybe you don't have cable TV anymore. Maybe you cut out channels. I mean, that's the analogy.
Mr. Reyes, let me just say, if you're going to continue to ask the questions, you're going to need to come up here to a mic because we have people that are only hearing half of this conversation.
Are you doing 3 minutes?
And I really, let's try to limit the questions so we can move on.
I'm all for that.
what I'm interested in learning, and I must say, you're the first mayor and council and city manager that actually ever in the 20 years I've been here who are actually doing something. But I'm concerned it's too little too late. So I applaud what you're doing. Everything Rich said is terrific stuff. And it's stuff many of us tried to do years ago, but we rejected.
Okay.
So here we are, and there's not a number on the retirement system. And when I talked to John Henricks, the county manager, last summer, it dawned on me that you can't run a city if you depopulate from 1960 to today from 10,000 to 5,000 and keep the same overhead. I'll keep it short.
Let's go to the question.
Then the question is, is the number that you're expecting that you need to pay the retirement system, when it's plugged into this budget, do you have enough money to pay the bills in 17-18?
Yeah, though that retirement money is plugged in to this budget.
Oh, it is plugged in?
It is, sir.
Okay, so I can leave tonight feeling warm and fuzzy.
I certainly hope so.
That you're going to pay your bills through 17-18?
Yes.
Okay. Do I have to worry after that?
Yes, please.
$1.2 million is built into the budget for the pension. Combined
There's $1.5 million built into next year's budget to cover the pension obligation for both police and fire. Combined. So it's in there. We're going to be able to pay our bills. It's built into the budget expenditures.
And
that's all it wants.
It gets dicey after that?
Well, I'd rather not. I want to answer your question.
We're getting beyond the scope of what the work session was supposed to be about, and I think we need to get back to that. That will be coming back at another time. I'm doing it too. I don't have a microphone.
Well, I thought that was the purpose of this.
It's partially the purpose, but it was noticed for a specific budget discussion tonight on Public Works
Public
and some
Works.
Others. And later it's going to be covering police and fire, which will include the ASRS issues. But anyway.
Yes, sir. Our attorney is worried about proper notice on the agenda.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reyes.
It's a single sentence question. I'm pretty loud, so I can probably hear this.
We still need a mic.
I'll go get it done.
And it's literally about the budget. It won't even include opinion. I do have a question, though. I don't see in this that we're in eight, nine years in what they've called a recovery. That's usually how long they last. We're looking at a contentious environment that one party may want to make sure things are bad by the time the next election comes. I don't see any contingency on here for declining revenues.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know when you address that, and I see you smiling, but I don't know when you address it. But hanging at 1.4, what happens when it becomes negative 2?
Okay. Pat, is that something you want to address?
I guess my question is, how do you address that in your budgeting? That I know you're using assumptions.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
It's been happening.
Microphone, sir. If you're going to talk to a microphone.
Thank you.
Mayor and members of the council, what I can say is at the very beginning, we talked about I could do a million scenarios. I can do scenario A, I can do scenario B, I can do scenario C. Carrie could do them until she's blue in the face and say, okay, what if we take in 2% less, what will that do? You still have the same decisions to make on what you're going to do proactively versus reactively. And that's why you monitor it and update it every year, and you say this is what we're looking at. If it turns out, and I have worked with cities with a declining population. I work with Miami. I work with Globe. I work with Mammoth. I work with Kearney. I work with a lot of small towns, and unfortunately they face the same things, and they're having to face hard decisions to make it work. But it's what do you do to mitigate that? And some of the programs that you have in there is the effort to mitigate it. So you don't just say, oh, well, this is the way it's going to be. No, what are we going to do? And that's what the whole purpose is here, is planning, forecasting, planning for the future that may or may not be 1.4% increase. It may not be 4.5 on the expenditure side. That might be less. That might be more. We can run them forever. That's what you have to do over this next year.
And it's based on plans of increasing revenue through certain projects that are coming up. So I don't know if that answered your question, but
yes, sir.
Great. Great. And normally we wouldn't be having this back and forth, but I think it's really important, as was mentioned, that this is transparent. We want people to really know what's going on rather than, as some would believe in the past, that hasn't occurred. And so that's why I'm allowing some of this. But we do need to use a mic, and we do need to keep on topic tonight of this was noticed as to how this was going to be done. Now we need to talk about, through our finance director, the public works budget when the time is appropriate.
Could I ask for a clarification?
Surely.
When you were talking about fund balances, you indicated that you didn't see allocations to other funds that we have. But in the February financial reports, there's an allocation to the general fund, and then approximately 1.2 million is allocated to other funds other than the general. So when we talk about the general fund or the contingency fund, are we talking just about the fund balance for the general fund, or are we talking about all of the fund balance?
Mayor and Councilmember Hansen, we're talking about the general fund right now. You don't have contingency reserves that I know of, Carrie, is that correct, for the other funds? So you have no contingency reserve in the sewer fund. You have no contingency reserve in the other funds. Okay. The allocations you see going back and forth is those interfund, those transfers,
right.
Interfund transfers.
Right.
They're not the contingency reserve in the other funds.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. Really appreciate your time and all of your work on our behalf.
You bet. Enjoy it. Thank you. Your presentation. There it is. Okay.
I need a microphone. Mayor and Council. So we're going to go over the public works. I put some general fund revenue at the beginning, but I think we've gone over that quite a bit already, so I don't know if I need to repeat it, but I did want to mention a couple things as far as what the amounts that were budgeted. The state shared revenues did go up slightly. Those come from the state. And then most of the city tax and the fees were budgeted at right about where we will be year-end FY17. So I thought it would be better to kind of be conservative with our numbers for next year. That way we don't budget for expenses based on revenue that, you know, we're not sure we're going to get. And if we do get it, then it can go towards increasing that contingency balance. So I'm not sure if there's any questions about any of these
Mayor,
revenue numbers.
Yes.
I guess my experience, you know, I think your revenue estimates are very, very conservative. Mm-hmm. I guess, as you just said, that's probably good in terms of certainly if they increase, then we're going to have a positive at the end of the year. I still have a concern in terms of whether or not we are collecting sales tax and bed tax fully for our community. Certainly your numbers here are quite different from my own experience as a business person on Main Street, and that always concerns me. We also, in the last city manager's report, there was a statement report from our tourism director saying that report back from information or from the visitor center is that people are, quote, people are staying in Sierra Vista and Tombstone because they can't find available lodging here. And yet our lodging tax seems to be on the decline. I mean, I don't, these are concerns that I have in terms of whether we are fully collecting
right.
our revenue. And I guess I need to state that, that concern, that opinion. Certainly, your conservative approach is probably the best one to take, mm-hmm. but I still think we need to become more aggressive in terms of looking at our people paying due taxes.
And there are a couple programs, if I could. There are a couple mm-hmm. programs that we're looking at, we'll be bringing to council for just that item.
And I was going to mention the city sales tax. The reason, you know, that number looks so much smaller than what was budgeted last year was, again, that street tax. It was budgeted to come straight into city sales tax, and then we transferred to streets. Correct. But now we're putting it straight into streets, so that's Correct. Where that decreases. Sure. So, I mean, I think it will come in pretty close to where it, the city tax itself should come in close to where it was budgeted at.
I also have another question. I might as well get them all out. For fiscal year 2018, with the sales tax, does that number, have you already taken out what is supposed to be going to the streets from
yes.
that figure?
Yes.
So you're estimating that the tax is going to go up an additional $750,000 approximately? About 2.4?
It's a, well, the year-end estimate for FY17 was 1.6, and so it's going up to 1.7, so a slight increase over what where we should be at the end of this year.
Well, didn't the 2017, that didn't included the street tax, right? In that figure?
The 2.4 does include the original amount that was budgeted, includes the $703,000 to streets. But
okay.
With the year-end estimate, that's the estimate without that money because we're recording it straight into the streets fund.
Well, I see for the budget for 2016 and 2017, but for FY 2018, I don't see anything but the 1.7.
As far as the streets portion of it, that's budgeted in the HERF fund.
I know, but this is what your estimate is for city taxes,
right,
correct?
Right. That's the city taxes without the streets.
Okay, what I'm saying is for FY 2017, mm-hmm. that was with the streets.
There's two different numbers up there.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
Mr. Marsh.
Can I explain it?
Yes,
I'm sorry.
No,
if we can look right there at the presentation.
My.
Councilwoman Jones, come on. I'm sorry.
Okay, never mind. I see what I did.
The estimate versus the...
The estimate, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, sure.
Okay.
No, I guess I'm just not as well as I thought I was.
So everything's, close to the FY18 was budgeted close to the year-end estimate for FY17. There were several funds that were budgeted for, like Wildland Services was budgeted at $50,000, and we've taken in nothing. There were several other funds similar to that. It came to almost $250,000, and of that, we've received $1,500. So a lot of the expenses were based on revenues that never came in.
Mm-hmm.
And then the transfers into the general fund, they're the same that we do every year. They're just increased by a small percentage, except for the one from wastewater, which we'll get to soon. So is there any questions on revenues?
Okay. Did you have a question?
I'm not asking any more questions.
Okay. And this just kind of shows the contingency that we budgeted the same. And the 81, possibly 81,000 short at the end of this year. Right. Okay, so starting with water systems, this fund is basically unchanged, and as you can see, not very much is used out of it except for electric.
Let's just make sure everybody's caught up.
Okay.
Is it?
Oh, sorry. I guess I'll.
Page 19.
Yeah, let me name off those when we get there. So, right, page 19.
Mayor, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Heretic, so because, I mean, I guess the question I have right now on this is, do we have any current issues with the fire suppression system, and do we have adequate water and pressure at this time, because we know we're going into fire season?
Yeah, we are, and thank you for asking that question. Part of that maintenance agreement I bought on the generators was exactly to address this. Yes, the reservoirs full, our water level is at 15 feet in our well. And we're able to pump water and keep our system going. We've even made a few repairs in the system this year where we had some leaks, but we're in good shape. Unless there's a catastrophic break in that line or a catastrophic break in the reservoir itself, we're fine going into the season.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then this water budget is for the pump house, the old pump house at the top of Tombstone Canyon. And in that pump house, the city owns a well, and we have a pump and a generator in that pump house, and that's how we fill our reservoir. So that's what this budget is for, is to make sure that we keep that reservoir full of water and that we do the things that Councilman Klein that she just asked about.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I have a question then. In reference to the electric, we're allocating. This is a worst case scenario.
Yeah, we've never really had to use the reservoir. We've never had to really fill it very quickly. It's really just spits and furts. But
right.
If we drained that reservoir and had to fill it, then it would almost double over in one night. So that's what that number is there for. And we've never really use much more than you're seeing that we've
right.
That we yeah.
But I that's just, what, that's I just wanted to make sure that we're looking at actually that's a contingency.
It
worst
it, it
case
is.
Scenario.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Next, cemetery, page 29 of the budget. Again, there wasn't any major changes to the budgeted amounts. There were some places that funds weren't really being used, so we decreased it a little bit. Total decrease of $2,750.
Mayor, I've got a question.
Please.
Mr. Heretic, we had for water in the 2016-17 budget, we had zero. Now we are looking at proposed the $1,200, but we're looking at a year-end estimate of $1,737. Where is that water going?
We actually have installed water at the cemetery at the request of the cemetery committee. So our first year was we had installation charges. We had backflow preventers that we had to install. So we had initial startup costs last year by restarting the water at the cemetery. The plan at the cemetery for the water was that if we decide to use water, that comes out of the maintenance budget, and it does not come out of this fund. So we're going to pay that water bill. What we had originally said is that we should pay that bill out of the maintenance fees that we collect from the cemetery. But we haven't. We've ignited the water. It's ready to go. We're paying a meter fee, but we haven't actually drawn any water as yet.
Okay, so this is for setup then, rather than use.
It was for setup. Now we are prepared to install drip irrigation on the tree lines at the cemetery. That's why we set the water up. But when we do that, I think we have to have a serious conversation, and the cemetery committee realizes that money should be paid for out of the maintenance fee. That's why one of the reasons we're collecting it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mayor?
Yes, sir.
I want to refer in terms of donations, which actually appear on a separate page, which is page 64, Fund 48, in which there's a line item for donations to the cemetery. And I would like to propose that be increased. I'm proud to announce that earlier this afternoon, the Bisbee Foundation voted $7,000 towards construction of a kiosk at the cemetery. Also, we've received funds. I'm the liaison to the cemetery committee, so I'm speaking here on their behalf. We also have a commitment in terms of computer software gift. And also, the committee is moving forward in terms of Adopt a Tree campaign, in which we are going to try to not only save the trees that are there, but to replant the trees that once were there. For those three reasons, I would like to increase that line item, page 64, for donations to cemetery to $10,000. And again, there's a general donation category that covers all of this, but I think it brings good publicity to the cemetery, and something that again, the cemetery is taking initiative on, and I think that should be acknowledged in the budget.
That's good news too, by the way, for that. Thank you.
So, for clarification, so instead of the 5,000. It's going up to 10?
Let me get that 64.
Correct. Right.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, can I ask a question, sir? How should we record that? And I mean, I'm not asking the question. What entity is that? I missed that. Who's going to be raising that money? Because I think we want to give credit to them in the budget. Can we do that, Kerry? I'm sure we could.
Well, I don't know that. That's there. I mean, we have the one thing is the Bisbee Foundation,
okay,
Evergreen Cemetery Endowment, from which you have received funds last year for the brochure. And this year we've made this commitment in terms that we just voted earlier this afternoon. Mm-hmm. I was a grant proposal from Andy here. Again, there's a commitment on the part of the cemetery, likewise, committee to, I really want to promote tonight the beginning of Adopt a Tree campaign to the cemetery. And so I want a line item there to acknowledge that commitment on the part of the cemetery committee in the city.
Thanks, sir.
Okay. So next, building maintenance, page 31. This one decreased $6,750. No major changes. There was just some amounts that hadn't been used at the end of this year, so we decreased the budget that will be needed for FY18.
And I had the questions for Mr. Heratic on this. Under the custodial supplies?
Yes.
My quick question is that $5,000 a realistic figure?
So
based on spending the last 2 years?
Yeah. What will happen on this budget is that at the end of the year will go through. That's what we've purchased. Now, what we'll do at the end of the year is we will go through and all the departments that buy janitor supplies from us, it's basically a commissary. Okay. So at the end of the year, what we'll do, and what we do every month is we have a spreadsheet, and then we bill out every department in the city that buys janitorial supplies. And then they pay us back for those janitorial supplies. So so that's why it looks as high as it is now. So but that number should go down to about $5,000. And it has for the last – this budget's one I've worked on for 8 years. I've been able to maintain that at $5,000 for almost 8 years.
The number won't go down, but the difference between income and expense will go down.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying is I understand the concept that basically you're acting as a store.
I am, yeah.
You're buying stuff, yeah. And you spent about 13 grand,
yeah,
buying stuff.
Yeah.
But you were only budgeted for five. And so the bottom line is you're coming in, your bottom line budget is you're coming in under, but that line item is over.
Yeah.
Can I answer?
Yeah, yes. Would you care?
Please.
So we get reports from the Public Works monthly, but on a quarterly basis, we reallocate those costs to the different departments. And at the time that we plugged in these numbers was February, so it would have been... We would have done our last allocation in December, so January, February, March, end of March is the next time we'll do the allocation. So it should decrease. What we do is we do a journal entry to take out of this account and move it into the others.
Got it. It's a journal entry. It's an allocation.
Right. And this number.
Now I understand. You were right.
Right.
Yeah, saying it was going to go down.
This number needs.
I was wrong.
Well, I just didn't have the technical, but
yeah.
All right.
Now I totally. Thank you, ma'am. I totally understand it.
That journal entry. You got to remember journal entry, Carrie. Yeah.
I have one question, and you may have said it and I missed it. Under contract services, you had budgeted $7,500 for 2017, and you're only estimating $2,360. Why would you not drop that down a little bit more? Because you've done that for the last 2 years.
Contract services, in building maintenance, there's things under those contract services that will come up. For instance, if I have an elevator failure at the library, I'll pick that up through building maintenance. Pretty soon here you'll see a bill coming through for $3,000. We have to do a weight test. Well, we didn't know what day the weight test was coming until the state of Arizona says, oh, you have a weight test in 35 days.
Okay.
So that'll be a $3,000 expenditure that will go under contract services because I've been bringing these service contracts forward to the city. There'll be some air conditioning and heating expenses that'll fall under contract services because I'll contract out with, I contract out for startup and shutdown of heating and cooling every year. So, but when I do that, I have to pay the price, whatever that price is. So I've not had to use that number necessarily, but you can see that in 2016, by the end of the year, I did use $6,016. That happened to be a year that where we used it. In 17, we budgeted a little more, $7,200, and actually, year to date, I've only used $2,700, and my year-end estimate this year is only at $4,000. Now, when I made
that's dock workers.
I'm sorry, contract services. Let's see. I'm sorry, you're right. Well, I was off on a line. So it's still the same, though. I mean, here what I did. I put that at the end of the year I would only have $2,360. The truth is, when I put that year-end estimate, I had no idea that the $3,000 elevator contract service fee would come in. So this year I will finish this literally with that $3,000. I'll finish at $5,360 if nothing else goes wrong between now and then. So I'll use almost all of the – I'll use $5,000 of that $7,500 that I budgeted.
Okay.
So the $6,000 this year is not going to be that far off. Okay. But it's there almost as a contingency under contract services. And I help pick those up for all the general fund entities. And you'll notice in their budgets they all have a contract service line, and that's how they pay for air conditioning and heating services or whatever contracts they have. But building maintenance picks up those bigger charges so that it doesn't shoot out the budgets of smaller departments.
Thank you, sir.
I actually thought that was pretty conservative.
Yes.
At 6,000.
It is pretty conservative. Well, this entire building maintenance budget is fairly conservative.
Correct.
And if I have a major air conditioning or heating failure in any building, I won't. Now, and you can see in past years, those aren't necessarily problems that I've had, and because what we've done when we have those failures, we just don't fix them. That's been we have no heating or cooling in this building, and we have little heating or cooling at the library. So, well, I mean that, you know, that, okay, but that is what we usually, if we can't afford to fix it, then we just go without, or we plug a little wall unit in. That's what we do. That's what we've been doing for about 5-7 years.
Thank you.
Yep.
Next, Public Works Admin, page 33. So this one decreased by about $40,000, and it was mainly because we allocated a portion of one of the administrative assistant's salary to wastewater, streets, and sanitation. We already do that with Mr. Heretics and the other admin assistant's salary, and it's to reflect the time that they work on those other enterprise funds. I don't know why hers was never allocated. She probably works on those more than anybody. So
this is also an attempt by Public Works. There, you know, there was a question asked earlier, well, what happened to all the money that was in the general fund? Well, you know, it's going for other things. So what we've done at Public Works since 2005, but really since 2008, that Public Works has eliminated almost $200,000 in salaries by eliminating all department heads, all engineering services. You know, I made a comment last night when I came to the city. There were 7 people in management in Public Works, including a 30-hour-a-week draftsman who sat at a table at the Public Works building and did engineering services for it. We've eliminated all those positions as the general fund became more and more stressed or taxed. This year, I went to Carrie and I suggested that we look at those allocations and re-up some of those allocations if we could, because there is no money left in the general fund, and we've asked Public Works since 2008. Every single mayor and council that I've dealt with has asked us for more and more and more and more. And so every year we figure out how to give more. So we're coming to the end of the line of more. So this year we've put everybody we could into the enterprise funds to try and take the stress off of the off of that general fund. So that's one of the reasons that number's that way.
I have a question, Mr. Raddick.
Yeah.
The line item on contract services.
On public work admin?
I'm sorry, professional fees. I beg your pardon. Professional fees.
Yes.
We haven't spent any money on that. What are we anticipating?
Professional fees, as you know, to eliminate, when Mr. Klimek left the city, he was at a salary of $98,000 a year. The city pays me $62,000. I'm not an engineer. We were paying Mr. Klimek because he was an engineer. Mm-hmm. However, the first thing that you'll find in all cities, you hire an engineer, and then the first thing the engineer says we need to get an engineer is what we did. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So what we've done what we did last year and what I came to you with was a proposal for engineering services so that if I get into a situation and I need an engineer, and I'm smart enough to know I'm not an engineer, and I'm smart enough to know when I don't know what I know, and I'm willing to ask an engineer. We went to bid, and we've got engineers that we are able to use for different things in the city, and this allows me to pay those engineers for services. We all know how engineering services go, and usually you got to have $150,000 in the bank to walk in the door. But when we worked out our deals with the engineers, we worked out hourly rates.
This is the three that out of Tucson that we approved. So
that's great.
I just wanted to make sure that was the dollar.
It's two of them. Okay. One of them is for the wastewater plant because we allocate them. But, yes, that's exactly what that's about. This is how we will pay for those engineers if we need engineering services. Okay.
So it's another one of those, if it's needed, and it's there.
Yeah, and it'll be needed. Perfect. for engineering service. It'll, it'll come up.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mayor, I've got a question.
Yes, ma'am.
So then there's one employee's salary coming out of this budget, correct?
All three, Andy and then the two admin assistants, all three of them are in public works, but they're also allocated percentages to streets, wastewater, and sanitation.
Okay, so this is just the percentage of
correct.
Okay. We've taken, if you look at, if, you know, when you go back on this budget and you go to 2016, there was a $66,351. And in order to help take some stress off the general fund, we have taken that down to 29.65. And we did it within the guides of being able to allocate that that money into those enterprise funds.
Taking your everybody's duties and saying this percent typically is for wastewater, this percent is for sanitation. You bet. Well done.
Next, Public Works Garage, page 35. There's no major changes, just a decrease of $3,842. Again, it was amounts that at the year-end estimate where we thought we could reduce it in FY18.
I would like to say about the garage that two city managers ago and three mayors ago, there was a decision made that we didn't need to fix cars anymore, that we would just send them out to the county. This cost us, our poor police and fire department spent hundreds of thousands of dollars combined paying other entities to fix cars, and we had to pay an hourly rate. It was really an aggravating time to be at the city because a decision was made without asking the employees how should we handle garage services. Now, so what the city had decided at that point is, well, we can have one part-time mechanic or one mechanic who can just do brakes, tires, and air conditioning, and we'll send everything else out to the county or to Sierra Vista, and we'll get our things done. Well, what ended up happening is we had garbage trucks sitting at the county, and it wasn't anybody's fault, but they have their own things to fix for 6-7 months, and they weren't being fixed. Our fire department was just struggling trying to get things back from a garage, and so what it forced us to do was to call on-call mechanics at $150 an hour. We would have to bring them down from Tucson to fix heavy fleet, because we have a heavy fleet in the city, and there was a decision made, well, we'll save money and we'll just do tune-ups and air conditioning and tires. We wasted way too much money doing that, and the difference is, and when we finally talked about and brought a mechanic back in, and we did this when we bought this new street equipment, because I made it really clear at that point, we are not going to go out and purchase $250,000 worth of equipment and not have a scanner or a mechanic to fix it. It was just craziness. So I will say, what I'm really proud of about this garage budget is, this budget, we don't have an ambulance sit at that garage for more than 5 hours at a time unless that part has to be shipped in. We have absolute turnaround in all of our vehicles. And sanitation, we were operating on borrowed garbage trucks. I had 5 trucks and couldn't keep one up and running. I was looking at borrowing or renting trucks. That doesn't happen anymore. So by giving this back to us and letting us manage our own fleet, this has been very cost-effective for not only public works but police and fire. So this is when City Manager Johnson allowed us to do this, this was one of the most cost-effective, smartest things that we did in public works, I think. And this budget is a reflection of that. Our poor little fire department was budgeting almost that much a year to take the fleet to Sierra Vista. They were paying for tow trucks. It just went on and on. So I'm really proud of this, of the garage services that we offer and the price that we offer it at.
Thank you.
Question?
Yes, Clyde.
So how many employees do we have coming out of?
There's just two employees
just
at the garage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Two full-time.
They're two full-time. That's right. Yeah.
Was that your question?
That was my question also.
Are you two are like
sorry.
Psychic or something?
No, we're on the same
A mind meld going on. Okay. All right.
No, we're just smart. Right.
Next, Parks, page 39. This one increased $13,780. That was mostly to add an additional part-time person. I think Parks has already been using, well, they were budgeted for one full-time, one part-time, but they've been using an additional part-time person on and off to help. So this will
So Parks had two full-time people in it, and when we were talking last year and we started expanding Parks, we did Grassy Park. We increased the amount of grass that we mow. By the way, we don't have a mower, so we have to go out with weed eaters and mow 3 acres of grass, in some cases, twice a week. So we stand out there with weed eaters and we weeded it down. City Manager Johnston, when they did this budget, we went into the budget with 2.5 people to maintain our parks, and we came out of the budget with one full-time and one weekender. It's not physically possible to maintain 15 parks. And I went to our current city manager and said, well, should I start fencing them off? What should I do with these parks? And he goes, no, this is a quality of life issue. We have to keep these parks open and make them work. So we are an event-driven town. It's something I've said before. When the weekends come, I have a 19-hour-a-week employee to maintain all of Old Bisbee and parties of 1,000 or 500 people. Again, it's not physically possible. You can't be an event-driven town and try and maintain in any level of good service when you don't have any staff on the ground to empty garbage and keep the bathrooms clean. And so we did take this down to 1.5 people, and I will tell you that other enterprise funds, other people in the city, we were piling up overtime because we had to bring other people in to help with these events, and it just didn't make any sense. So, again, this is something we looked at very carefully, and we look at what drives the city, and events are part of what drives the city, but we have to service those events on a basic level. We've done other things to do this to help parks. We've changed trash to 6 days a week to make sure that I have additional people in town if there's an event. But that wasn't really the best way to fix this, and this doesn't really fix the problem, but this really does help alleviate it and make it easier. Because one of the things we're talking about and that we all want to do is we all know that we want a park in San Jose, and we hope that we can get close to that this year, but we have to maintain those parks. And cutting grass in itself in the summertime is monumental. So what we've really done with the parks budget is that we focus a bit more energy in the summertime, and traditionally we could pull some of that off in the wintertime. That didn't happen this year. We had a year, when you look at our sales tax revenues, we didn't have any slow months. We've been busy month after month after month. But this will help. This budget will help and alleviate some of that stress on just everyday maintenance at our parks. We have 15 parks that are open 24/7, and we have 4 restrooms that are open 24/7. So that's, we service 15 parks 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. That's our park system.
I have a question.
You're going to ask the same question I was going to, I
know. No, well, I don't think we got that going on. Operational expenses, Mr. Harady. Well, I'm sorry. Ms. Hansen has a question. The operational expenses... obviously, there's a lot of things that go into operational expenses. I just don't know if something happened the last couple years. The point is we're always over budget on operational expenses, and so I'm wondering if that $10,000 is again a realistic figure, because it's less than half of what we're spending this year.
No, it isn't. But if you look down a bit further, yeah, you'll see things like landscaping materials. Unfortunately, I don't get enough to buy enough trees or shrubs for our parks, because I have to put it into operational expenses. I usually have my handout begging for from the Bloomers and other organizations. It's not enough, and it's not enough in landscape as far as being a public works director and wanting beautiful parks. We talked early in the budget analysis, there's things that are real and there's things that we want, and there's opposing sides to things. It probably isn't enough, but I want to say this, that you can see that in past years we have done better on those operational expenses. So mm-hmm. what we're what we're going to really have to do in parks is there isn't any money left, and we know it. So we will really knuckle down in parks. I've talked to Tom Coble. He's got a good budget this year with a little bit of extra help. And, you know, operational expenses end up being things that you just don't plan for.
Okay.
I will tell you, one thing I think you'll notice in town is I think our town is cleaner than it's been in a long time. And I think we consistently keep our town clean, right? So I have 48 inmates, and when I send them out to do weed whacking or work, I need 48 rakes, 48 shovels, 48 hand snips, 30 weed eaters. It goes on with those expenses. And the more we do and the more inmates I bring out, the more operational expenses tools I use. We had this conversation once. They go, well, these inmates break so much stuff. Why don't we get rid of them? I said, well, I've got 24 inmates at 50 cents an hour. If it costs me $10,000 in tools, I'm still better off buying them new tools and keeping tools than paying 24 men $10 an hour to maintain the parks.
Right. My question wasn't really justifying the 10,000. My question was, is that enough?
No, but I need to make it work. I mean, what I'm saying is that I will make it work.
I just wanted to make sure you understood that.
Yeah, I know, sir.
You're not being questioned about.
No, I.
Okay.
All right.
Mayor, I do have two other questions.
Oh.
How many employees will the? In my book, it says you had two. The adjusted budget is going to be for two part-time employees.
Well, there's enough money in there for me to, and what I'll do on this is that I will hire seasonally. So okay. I'll keep Gabe on the weekends at 19 hours, and I won't and you can see in my budgets as I go, just because I get the money to hire it doesn't mean I go out and hire it on July 2nd. So right. If we're coming into a busy season here now, and I'm hoping we have a good Sonora Fest and I make a lot of money and I can buy a mower, so I'm going to be looking to get somebody to help ride that mower.
That was my second question. When are you going to get that mower? Well, you've got how much in donations
five,
already?
And I'm only 15 off.
15?
That's $20,000 for a platform.
That thing keeps going up every time I talk to
well,
you.
Every year, it's another year I haven't bought the mower and it does go up.
Well, we get it before it shows up.
I know. We got to have a good Sonora Fest. But what I'll do is I'll put that person on seasonally. So when I get in the middle of really heavy grass season, I'll put an ad in the paper and I'll bring somebody on and I'll make it a seasonal job. I won't keep them all year.
Well, it just seems like we would be saving money if we would get that lawnmower
Absolutely.
You know, pay constantly for the weed eaters.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I need to get the lawnmower. I'm working for that lawnmower.
So isn't it more advantageous to try to figure out how to get that lawnmower?
So I'm hoping for a good Sonora Fest. I'm hoping I make a lot of money doing Sonora Fest, and I can come to you and go, I made a lot of money, and I need a little extra for the mower. That's my plan.
Ms. Klein.
Okay. So for clarification,
yes,
we have one full-time and two part-time, or is it one full-time, two part-time, and you're adding two part-time or seasonal?
We have one full-time and one part-time. What I want to do is add a part-time seasonally. Right now, we currently have a full-time and a part-time.
Right.
And that part-time is 19 hours. When we get into heavy mowing season or our, depending on what our season is, then I'll add another part-time for the season. But I won't probably put that person on for a whole year.
Yeah, but you're...
Okay so then we can look at it as two part-time and one full-time.
Yes.
Okay.
And I want you to know I will not fully expend.
Yeah.
Okay.
We understand.
Okay.
We understand.
All right.
I just want to know how many people are, you know, are going to be working in the parks.
Okay, we got it.
Okay. Swimming pool, page 41. Of course, this budget increased $48,647. That was mostly for the salaries for pool employees, and there was over $35,000 in donations collected this past year to help with those expenses to keep the pool open longer this season.
And that should be an ongoing situation. So that's the good news is the pool starts to be used. I think that we can probably think more donations are coming in from those using it.
And the $35,000 is on top of the $41,000 for salaries? Is that what you're saying?
No. The 31 is actually shows in the miscellaneous donations fund, but it will offset these costs. So it is $41,000 is the actual cost for the employees.
The okay. Mayor?
Yes, sir.
You're making the donation form again, page 64. Only it indicates that you've raised $35,600 last year, but only budgets $15,000 for the coming year. I don't understand that. If we're going to,
because it's a split budget. Remember, half part of this pool budget starts in this budget cycle, and then it finishes in the next budget cycle. Because the pools, because when we hire for the pool, it's seasonal hire. So we hire for the from Memorial Day to July, we spend about $15,000. Then July 1st is when we spend the rest of that money. So that's why it shows. It shows the way it does.
Well, I'm assuming if we're having your budgeting annual personnel cost of $46,000, mm-hmm. that there's no indication in terms of how we're going to offset that. Last year you collected $35,000, but there's no projection other than $15,000 in terms of donations for the coming year to cover this.
I think at the time we did this, we didn't know this was going to be an ongoing thing. So we can always change this if we're expecting 35.
I'm desiring some type of a 5-year plan for pool reservation or renovation and operation. I mean, one of the concerns that I have in terms of the pool is that every year that I've been on the council, we've had this same discussion, and we say, okay, we'll do it one more year. And I thought this year we had a major fundraising, very successful, and that's acknowledged in terms of our financials. But you've only budgeted $15,000 for the coming year, and there's also nothing. I don't see where fees are, where fees come into this. I couldn't find that in your budget.
Well, we don't. We unfortunately, with fees, we had a private contractor for the pool, and we didn't get a list of what they collected for fees. So I can make up fee numbers, but I'd rather not make up numbers and do projections when I don't know what we're going to make at the pool. So we didn't have any accurate historical basis for fees for the last couple of years. We just never received that information from our contractor. So we didn't, I don't know how many kids will come to the pool. I just didn't know that it was a great idea to say, I'm going to collect $7,000 in fees and I collect $500. I just didn't want to balance the pool budget off a number that I knew was just pie in the sky. So I didn't put those fees down because I honestly don't know what that's going to be. The reason we budgeted $15,000 is because that's what it will cost us to get through the pool from Memorial Day to July, and that we are going to, we need to rely on, hopefully we can rely on the local citizens to raise that $30,000 every year.
And it should be noted, Mr. Dunn, that we also have a 3-year commitment with Copper Queen Hospital. And so you're saying, we're doing it year by year. You are correct. But yeah. We also have a commitment to the hospital that a minimum of 3 years. So we're looking ahead to a 3-year plan.
That should be reflected in the budget. That's the point that I'm making. That is now not now reflected in the budget. Both donations of equipment as well as donations.
Great. We'll ask the city manager and finance to update
and
that.
And I certainly needs to be a line item for fees. It can be zero at this point, but at this point I don't see that in the budget. And again, I'm interested in the long-term sustainability of that pool, and this here budget does not indicate that.
Well, there is no, quite frankly, I want to be very honest about a pool. There is no long range. There is no way to sustain a pool long range. Pools are nothing but money pits. If you can't, when 3 years ago we sat down to figure what it would cost based on the number of kids we had at the pool, we needed $12.85 per swim to make the pool pay for itself. So unfortunately with pools there is no sustainable, Councilman Dunn, it's so hard to sustain pools because of the expense of pools.
It's a proven fact that pools will not make money. Pools will continue. in any municipality, pools lose money.
Right.
And it's a quality of life question, and we have to decide, the council has to decide, what is that quality of life worth? And so right. that's where we're at. So,
okay,
hope, well, pardon me.
But we should put that line item for fees.
I guess, Mayor, it's also a, it's not just a council decision, but it's a community decision. Mm-hmm. And that is, does the community want to continue supporting the pool in the level that they did this last year, very successfully so, or not? And so, I mean, this is, it's just more, you know, I don't know how we can.
Mayor, can I address it? Thank you. Councilman Dunn, we're taking notes. Putting a line item here for fees, we can do that.
Yeah.
I want to give Kerry credit, but we will do that. But the amount is what we're concerned about. We don't want to have an unrealistic budget. Putting in fees as we did this year for APS, for example, we're going to raise $45,000. We came in with $300 so far. Okay? So Kerry is saying she's been very conservative, which is a good thing. But we will put a line item in here for that because we need it if the fees do come in. But we'll be very modest on what we put in terms of the dollar amount.
Well, I guess my point is if the donations and the fees do not come in at the same level, then a year from now we're going to say we're back to talking about closing the pool.
Well, you're absolutely right about that. That's, you're not wrong about that.
Well, actually, you are wrong because we'll have a MOU with a hospital that says that no matter what, this will be open for 3 years.
Well, even more of
but the money part will be the part we have to figure
out.
Well,
I don't think anybody's arguing about this. We're going to get it done and bring it back.
Yeah. Well, it's not reflected in the budget. Okay.
Yeah, no, it you're absolutely right, Mayor Pro Tem. It's not, and we're going to see about getting that taken care of. You bet.
I think that when we make all the renovations at the pool this year and we complete them, I think we're going to have a good pool year and we're going to show real growth in response to what the community wanted at that pool. So we're really hoping by getting the pool up and running properly and having a little bit warmer water that we'll actually be able to build a better pool season.
Absolutely.
So we're hoping
that works.
You know, I understand what Mr. Dunn is saying, you know, reference the fees. And we do have a history of where our fees were, and they've come up, you know, over the years about raising them, and, you know, there was something placed in, I don't remember, like the late 80s or something, where swimming was free, and that was always a source of contention.
Yeah.
That was one of Mayor Wheeler's things that he had put in, and I get where he was coming from on that. And he meant well on it. However, pools are very expensive, and so, you know, we did have to adjust fees and things like that. Mm-hmm. But with the private organization that had run it before, I believe that we did have their schedule somewhere because they had to come before mayor and council for insurance and things like that, and they had their budget lined out. So that has to be somewhere in the archives around here.
That was supposed to come to us at the end of every year in their contract. We were supposed to get, we were supposed to have all that reporting done to us. That reporting was all supposed to come to the city at the end of the year, and we were waiting for it at the end of the year because there was no way they could get the information until the end of the year, and we did not get the information.
But they had run it for more than just 1 year, so
that's my problem.
Somewhere, it's, you know,
for 2 years, I did not get that
it
information.
Is there.
So.
However, how many guards are we looking at hiring?
Five.
So, five guards total, or are we hiring a pool manager?
Five guards. The pool manager is the lifeguard.
So five. Total.
Five total.
How many hours are we looking at being?
That's part of what we're discussing now. We think the pool, we're not going to do night swimming anymore. Remember, pool salaries went to $10 an hour, plus all the costs associated with that. The pool, we're working with the Friends of the Pool now to establish hours. We think we'll be open at 8 in the morning till 11 for adult swim, and then from 11:30 or 12 to 3 or 4 in the afternoon, we'll have other mixed swimming at the pool. But that's a decision we're working with the Friends of the Pool with because they came forward with money to staff the pool. So we have meetings scheduled with them next week and very shortly today we emailed amongst ourselves the new pool schedule and what we think the new fees will be, but we haven't actually firmed up that schedule. But it will be fewer hours than it was in the past, I can tell you that.
Okay, so then we're not going to have swim lessons for the for we, the
we are
ones?
We are doing what we're going to use at the pool is we're going to use the Tucson Parks and Rec model. Tucson Parks and Rec model for pools now is when you go to a pool in Tucson, there are one or two senior lap swims open at all time. The truth is about 55-60% of the pool are not kids. It is seniors who are using our pools. We have more seniors at our pool than we do children. But when we start doing these things now, we're going to combine things in the pool. So we're not going to have timeout just for swim lessons. You're going to be a section of the pool will be roped off, and we'll do swim lessons. We'll do multiple things at the pool at one time.
What about when the Boys and Girls Club?
Boys and
because they come up regular.
Well, the Boys and Girls Club, they do come up regularly. That doesn't change what we do at the pool. What that changes is all that changes is how many lifeguards have to be on deck at a time. Now, there are numbers that are set for pools and kids and lifeguards. Those numbers aren't all arbitrary, but there is no federal law that says I must have 10 lifeguards on the deck for every 100 kids in the pool. There are numbers that are guidelines, and we're working with the American Red Cross. We're going to be using their guidelines at the pool. So when the Boys and Girls comes to the pool, and we've already invited them to the pool, we need to say things to them like, you know, the kids aren't coming for free, and you can't bring 150 kids. There's not enough room in the pool anyway. But the kids at the Boys and Girls Club don't come up in really large numbers. In the past, they stopped coming because the water's cold, and we don't have an aquatic center. A good number of the kids in Bisbee don't actually want to swim in an outdoor open pool. They'd rather go to an aquatic indoor center. And that we see that year over year, there are fewer kids at our pool, and there are more and more seniors.
Used to be kids, yeah.
And that's happening in every city in America. So it won't change anything. If the kids from the Boys and Girls Club come, then we service the kids from the Boys and Girls Club.
Then our lifeguards will be WSI certified?
Our lifeguards are all being trained through the American Red Cross, so they will all be certified. We would not dream of putting a lifeguard at a pool that is not properly trained and certified. We'd never do it. We wouldn't be allowed to open the pool by the insurance company.
Okay, and I've got one more question.
Yeah.
What about cleaning supplies and stuff like that? Have you budgeted for that, or... I mean, I'm not seeing it.
Custodial supplies?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I'll be taking that out of building maintenance.
Out of what?
Out of my building maintenance budget. There is no money to run the pool, and there is no money in the general fund to open the pool. So everything we do, everything we've done this year in Public Works is try to consolidate these budgets and get as much stuff. You know, it's all general fund money. Even building maintenance is general fund money. But we are so taxed on the general fund that whatever I could pull, whatever I don't have to put in here, I tried not to, especially for the pool because it's just a money pit, and I got to make it work somehow. So I'm going to cover those expenses out of building maintenance.
Building maintenance?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Can I mention something real quick about the salaries?
No, absolutely not. I'm kidding, of course.
Okay. It was based on the number of hours from when the pool is open from July 1 until the first week of September, and then from Memorial Day through the end of June.
Yeah.
So we figured out how many days a week, how many hours it would be open, and then times how many people we would need. So if anybody wants to see those numbers, I do have them. Not with me, but I have them.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, then the last of the general fund, public work general funds, is the senior center. There wasn't really any big changes here. We're just talking about maybe making some changes for the future as far as the level of support the city gives to the center, but for this year it remains the same. They weren't given enough notice to try to come up with a plan.
Sir, Mayor?
Yes?
Certainly in the past, we've talked about Senior Center becoming an enterprise fund.
I want you to know when we did the research on the lease for the Senior Center, that was their plan in 1978, 1980. The senior center was supposed to be really in the, when you look at the original paperwork on the senior center, they were going to be, they didn't want to be, they didn't actually want to be part of the city. They wanted the city to build the building. They wanted to require some things, but they wanted to run their own organization. That didn't pan out for them financially. I started looking for a lease for the senior center, and I think the last one I found was 17, 18 years old. And when I looked at that lease and all the promises and all the projections that we made to operate the senior center, none of it came to fruition. So now we're supporting the senior center. I have fought for the senior center every year I've worked at the city, and I absolutely support the senior center. I'm a member and getting close to being a full-time participant at the senior center. So I think it's important that we maintain it and keep it running. And I don't know if you've been to our senior center lately, but you can't walk in there on any weekday and see less than 25 or 30 people in it, you know, either playing bingo or bowling or poker or...
Bowling?
Yeah, they've got this. They've got a bowling league, and they bowl.
Well, I thought you said.
Yeah, and they take it and they throw it towards this monitor, and they got a whole bowling league, and it's 80 and 90 year olds. So you should see them. They get all. It's great in there. So there's a lot of energy at that senior center, and I fully support. Personally, think this is one of the great things that we have in this town. So, and we do give them a little. Mr. Marsh and I went around about the senior center, but. We really need to get. We need to help the senior center find a way to be off of the city dole. And I, you know, we can talk about that later. But we do have some ideas.
Okay. Thank you.
Next is government grants, page 49. There's not really much here. I think they used a little bit in Tintown last year, and may possibly use some more this coming year. But it's a grant, so if we spend the money, it gets reimbursed.
Okay.
And streets page, well, transportation grants are just as none. Streets page 57. So we increased revenues, expenses, $7,385. It's not much of a change. The HERF revenue is based off from what we get, the numbers we get from the state. And the 1% sales tax increase is based off where we were at the end of 17. And then we tried to keep our expenses within those revenues so that we can work on that fund balance.
Mayor, a couple questions.
Okay, okay.
You go on. Number one, line item, vehicle parts and labor. We have been spending quite a bit of money, and it's showing $1,200 as opposed to the $16,000 we spent this year.
Carrie, I don't know why I put 1,200.
I'm not sure. You know,
the truth is, we with new paving equipment and other things, I won't get out of the gate with a transmission flush for $1,200.
I sort of thought that. And then the line while you're looking at it directly above that for your non-cap equipment purchases.
Again,
there's nothing there.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you just look at thousands of numbers,
of
and
course.
After a while, you know,
absolutely.
You kind of miss things like that. So
absolutely, and I'm certainly not, finding fault by any means. Mm-hmm. So I'm very appreciative of this. It's just that,
Carrie, we're going to have to shuffle some numbers around to make that work.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to stay with, and you know, it's her fund, so we stay within. We have to stay within this budget to make this balance.
Absolutely,
there's no other money.
So we can send you back to the drawing board on this particular one, and council, what our game plan is that the department heads on each of these and the city manager and finance will be getting together based on the notes that we've given them, and then they will go ahead and redo this section and get it out to us for us to look at prior to the next meeting. But the next meeting we'll be discussing a different section And so we will be all coming back together when all of these are done so that we can then see those changes. And but you'll get the changes way ahead of time is what I'm saying, based on our conversation.
And you'll also notice in these enterprise funds that the beauty of the enterprise funds is that they cover a lot of general fund expenses, ASRS, medical,
right.
All that stuff's covered within this fund. So these employees that work in this general fund, they really are in this HERF fund, they take little or no expense out of the general fund.
Right.
So it's a self-sustaining fund.
Mayor?
Yes, sir.
I've got a couple of questions. Okay, so how many employees are coming out of the salaries here?
Four.
Four?
Four full-time employees. Well, there's four full-time street employees. Remember, we're also paying salaries for admin assistant in public works. We have part of my salary comes out of here.
Right, it's a very small percent, though,
yeah.
for the admin. It's like 5% of the three of their salaries, and then the, is it four guys now?
Yeah, it's four full-time employees, yeah. So there's little other things that nick away at that salary number.
Okay, and then, well, the mayor pointed out on those two line items where there's one was nothing and one was, you know, way down. On the other end of it, we've got professional fees that went from year-end estimate of 750 to 10,000, and on the capital expenditures, that's almost doubled to 10,000 as well.
Well, I think part of that 10,000 is where my non-capitalized purchases yes. went, and where part of my vehicle parts and labor went. And what was the other one, Councilman Klein?
Professional fees.
Professional fees, again. Well, professional fees, we've misallocated money from professional fees. Some of that needs to go back down into non-capitalized equipment purchase and vehicle parts and labors. There'll still be some money in those professional fees because when we, and the engineering services that we use, some of the questions we will ask will be from engineers who deal with streets and infrastructure and those kind of things. So we'll still have to pay some of those fees out of either contract services or that line item. But that just, we need to make an adjustment on that amount of money.
Okay.
Was there one more? Did you have another one? One number?
Yeah. Just questioned the capital expenditures.
It just got
professional fees and then the employees.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mayor Pro Tem. Somewhat related here is that this is certainly not an impact on the budget items here. It's just that I'm wanting to repeat my intent to move forward this coming year with the redesign and paving of the east entrance off of Highway 80 in the Old Bisbee, and the council is going to be receiving a recommendation of that regard from the iBisbee. I've discussed this with Andy and with the city manager, and I do want to make sure this is also related to this question about professional fees. I would like to see us move forward immediately in terms of preparing drawings and specifications for that project for council in public review.
Okay.
Next, airport, page 65. We decreased revenues and expenses by $25,000. This was, we set the gas revenue and rents at about where they were at FY17. The gas revenues seem like they've been going down every year. But the expenses, they don't really exceed their expenses either. So we just set the expenses to match revenues, which is pretty close to where they'll be at the year-end estimate for 2017. So they should be able to meet that amount.
Questions?
Oh, I've got one.
Okay.
So the transfers from the general fund, 2016 was budgeted $35,000, and now it's down to $5,160. This is use of reserve funds?
It's use of reserves to make up for the shortfall of revenues to cover these expenses. But it doesn't look like it was actually needed. If you look at the amount of actual expenses, it was pretty very close to being covered by the gas and rents revenue. Okay.
Thank you.
Mayor, excuse me. Yes. A question that I wanted, just a topic I wanted to bring up in terms of streets, and that is we pay $100,000 a year for street lights. And this kind of this is kind of continuing discussion. We spend a heck of a lot of money on street lights, some of which are in the right place, some of which are in the wrong place, some of which people don't want, some of which people want more of.
I came to the city council 3 years ago in a budget and said I'm paying more for street lights than I am the two men who are trying to fill the potholes. And by the way, there's no money left to fill the potholes because we're paying for street lights. So it is a crazy expensive cost for a little city to bring, to take out of HERF money $100,000. But interestingly enough, we passed a sales tax that draws that brings us in a pretty significant amount of money. But the only way to change this is to go to a lighting district and to have the homeowners pick up the expense of those street lights. This is something Dee Flanagan talked about years ago. And when the founding fathers came to Arizona, they decided they didn't want, that's not how they wanted to set up the state or do things. So they decided they didn't want to be taxed for all these additional things. But this is something very common in Bisbee. There's never been a call that said, we'll accept a reduction in services. The call is always, well, what do you mean we can't have more? Well, what do you mean we can't have that? But it has to be paid for somehow. And this is a great example of $100,000 in streets. You know, right now I can finish the sidewalks on Naco Highway for $90,000, but I don't have the money. I'd love to finish the other side of that highway and say, well, let's pave both sides and let's do the sidewalks. But I'd love to have that money to put into construction projects or street projects. But we've decided as a city we would rather lease a lamp post for $1 a post and then pay a metered charge for that electrical light that we throw out on the street. So I will tell you that the mayor's, I've been dealing with APS for many years on this, and the mayor's finally got it wrapped up to a point where we're now starting to pull poles and lights. If I had my way, quite frankly, I would arbitrarily go through town and pull every other light out and get the bill down to $50,000, and then I'd be strung up on one of the dark poles the next week. But streetlights become very personal for people in this town to a point when a neighbor wants a light cut off, I literally have to do the 500-foot rule and measure 500 foot from that light and make sure that every other neighbor in that circle is happy with that light being shut off. And in the end, I've only shut off maybe four or five lights in the last 8 years because of the conflicts between neighbors on who thinks I should have a light and who thinks I shouldn't. When Tom Klimek was here, we actually went out, rode the system with APS, a couple of us, night after night to see how it was stationed out and how it looked. Well, what we determined was that it wasn't really too bad of a layout. And what's really interesting for me is a couple weeks after we did that, I went to Sierra Vista early one morning to do something at the city, and there were no street lights on Frye Boulevard. I couldn't find my way anywhere on that street. I'd never been to such a dark street. And I wondered why such a big modern city didn't have any lights, and we thought we had to have one every block. But that's what our citizens seem to want. That's what they've asked for. And me turning off lights, which I've tried routinely, never turns out very well for me. But that expense is a crazy high expense for a little town, but that's what our citizens
did. You
want.
Have a suggestion?
No, I'm just bringing this to the attention of citizens. I mean, your citizens say we need to cut costs, and we need to, stick to a stronger budget. This is the point of my introductory comments that citizens keep wanting more, and frankly, the lights are not in the wrong place. I mean, I need to have a flashlight to get from here to my house, frankly, and I live with that. They're certainly, well, anyway, I'm just bringing this up in terms of we're spending a heck of a lot of money here, a large percent of our streets budget, and if we're wanting to reduce service, this is one way of doing it, would be cutting down streetlights.
Maybe, go ahead, I'll ask after you.
I did have one question. I thought that there was a move to go to LED lights.
There is a move which we have to pay for.
What's the investment on that?
Well, let me just tell
obviously
you.
A lot.
Yeah. To remove a pole is between $1,000 and $4,000. That's the cost APS wants from me to remove a lamp post if I don't want the post. To just remove a light is between $500 and $1,200 just to unscrew the light. It would be great to go to LED, but then
I thought APS was the one that was doing this.
Well, they won't do it for free. And if we want to go to LED, we would have to. Not only do we pay for the bulb, but we pay for them to get up to screw the bulb in. We had an option, and we still have the option. We could take over the maintenance of those lights ourselves if we wanted to. But in order to do that, you've got to have the equipment and the manpower to do it. And we have not demonstrated that we are able as a city to maintain that kind of infrastructure.
Right. So when you start buying a boom truck and
you start putting people
on it, that $100,000 becomes cheap.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, but
we have a boom truck, don't we?
We have a boom truck. We bought a used boom truck that's had to be drug up to Tucson yesterday, actually. Has a computer module out. But you can't do the city. I couldn't do the city with one boom truck. And I can't put one man in a boom truck and say, all right, hit the town and just be on your own. So the $100,000 won't pay for it. It won't pay for it.
Yeah, LEDs are incredibly expensive.
No, I understand that, but for some reason I had gotten the impression that this was a program or something that APS was doing across the nation, but to no charge to the city. And I don't know. Mm. I must have been.
I can tell you about utilities. What utilities really like is they like when the meter's spinning really fast. And that's what they seem to like more than anything.
Like
so.
My house.
Mayor?
Yes, ma'am.
To kind of go along with what Mr. Dunn said, we're talking about where we can cut back on lights and stuff like that. I get questioned all the time about the lights on Main Street. It used to be a special thing at Christmas time, when we had the day after Thanksgiving. And the lights came on, and they were there for the season, and then after that they were turned off. But they're lit up year-round. So how much is that costing us?
Those are those LED lights. Ken budgeted the cost analysis on that, and we went to those LED lights, and we went to them specifically to keep them on year-round. That's what the merchants, they bought the light bulbs, and they helped pay for the installation. That's what they asked us for when we put them up. Ken Budge did the... he did the cost analysis on that. What I can tell you is that our electric charge from APS, it's a metered charge, and those light bulbs have not changed the metered charge.
Okay, so what is it costing us for those lights?
We don't know because the entire system is metered at once.
Okay.
It's singly metered. But what I can tell you is that the metered charge has not gone up. And, in fact, I have cut out some things. So it's actually gone down just a bit. But those LED lights are so effective, that's why it would be great to see them, that we have no metered, we have no different in our metered charge. And the lights being on all the time is the merchants, like I said, they paid for about 50% of the cost of those lights, and what they asked for was to have them on all year round. That's what they thought would enhance the experience on Main Street. That's why
I would like to suggest that I don't want to stifle any questions. This is really important that we get our questions out. But on some of these, maybe not, and I wasn't picking on your last question, Ms. Klein, some of these questions could be taken offline too because they don't directly impact the dollars here. And we've reached 3 hours, and we're going to reach the point of diminishing returns on important budget items. And so I'm just suggesting that we go ahead, ask those questions that are important to the budget in front of us, and any of those other things about perhaps we can ask offline and get your answers to.
Could I just ask that you consider looking at that for the next year's budget, some type of program or something?
For LEDs? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wastewater, excuse me, page 69.
Revenues and expenses increased $108,202. The revenue is expected to remain the same. The increase, there was the $272,900 transfer to the general fund that was proposed because the general fund fell short of revenues by almost $300,000 over expenses. So there needed to be some way to make up for that revenue shortfall. And wastewater had, I don't want to say extra money, but money that they didn't budget to use this year. So we proposed that we do a one-time transfer to the general fund. And this could be either a one-time transfer or it could be a loan that would be repaid depending on how quickly depending on if there's a known amount of time that it will be repaid, then it would be considered a loan. If we don't know the time frame, then it would just be considered a one-time allocation.
And I would like to indicate that my preference is that we don't spend tonight debating whether this should be done or not, or how it's to be done, but rather we continue with this budget to come up with our final number, because we don't even know what that final number is. And then we can talk about what that number is, if it should come out of this budget, and how it's done. And so I would prefer that we that will be in place for to discuss another time. But let's just concentrate on the budget itself.
Well, I do have a question for the city attorney on that.
Correct.
Yeah, and I have had a question for the city attorney also on that.
Okay, so. Well, I think we should be able to ask our questions.
Yes.
Well, that's fine. You can ask the question. The city attorney can give you an answer. I'm just suggesting that we are not going to, at this time, debate about it, but the city attorney can certainly provide you the legal advice that you want.
Okay, I don't know if we're on the same wavelength here, Mr. Dunn, or not, but is it legal to do that, to take it from an enterprise fund and put it in the general fund?
Yes, it is. In the charter, there's a requirement that it to do that kind of transfer, it takes five votes of the council. So it's a supermajority. Now, for the wastewater fund, Ms. Orduño checked, because I knew there were special considerations for the wastewater fund under our agreement with NADBANK, and she researched and found what those numbers are, the required amount to be kept in the wastewater fund. So that would be separate. But in general, transfers from enterprise funds would be allowed with five votes of the council. Special revenue funds typically are more of an accounting device than they are kind of a legal requirement. So that would be my answer.
I have another question for our city attorney.
Sure.
I did not eat dinner, so you better keep it simple.
I'm not going to be rushed. I'm not going to be rushed, frankly. So we're budgeting here for your 35% of your services. Are you contributing that amount of time to providing legal service assistance to the wastewater?
No. No, I saw in a couple different places legal services, contribution to legal services, and I think whoever came up with those numbers both last year and this year were just trying to find places to fund legal services, not based on any kind of true allocation of our time.
Well, is this something we need to check with our auditor in terms of, is this, you know, kind of what the term that our presentation here was, that one of her points was that fees can only cover cost of service, nothing more, she made the statement.
Yeah, she would be talking about something different there if she's talking about fees. Fees would be like, you know, charging people to make copies of public records. You can only recover costs. I don't think I wasn't there for that statement, but I don't think she was necessarily talking about the allocation to legal fees. But I think Carrie would know a lot better than I would about.
There has been a large amount of time that the legal people have spent on the amnesty program. They also look into liens for us. A lot of the, I can't think of the word, the court orders that come in on foreclosures and bankruptcies and things like that, they review all that. So all those pertain to the wastewater department.
I realize that there are he provides services, but 35% seems hard to justify.
Could you refer to the fees? Sorry.
Mayor, can
yes.
I? Could you go back to the fees that Pat was referring to in terms of special event fees, for example? She was referring to us making sure that we can charge our direct cost when it comes to special event fees, for example, but we can't go over that, is what she was referring to. That's what Brett was getting to.
Yeah, I understand that. I still raise that question.
Yeah.
Did you have another question?
No, I didn't. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So, also another question, I guess. Electricity, I thought with our solar system we were eliminating our need for electrical service.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen.
Well, we don't eliminate our need. We eliminate the daytime need, but the people still are using their toilets at night, so we're still doing it at night. But I think if you look here at your electrical fees, let me get to that line, you'll see a huge... Remember, let's see. Let me get to the electrical fee line for you. Because we are using less electricity, right? All right. So if you look here and... we budgeted... $45,000 year to date. In February we were at 68. I don't exactly know where we are now, but if you went back in past budgets, you'll see this is a much lower number than we've had in the past. What I don't have here is, let me see if I can find it on my sheets. Carrie, I have this year's, but I don't have
the
I'm not showing the 60. Let me see here. Oh, here we go. Let's see if I got it here. This is a big budget. Okay. If you look at, I'm on page 71 of 90, and if you look at in 2016 at electrical, you can see that we budgeted 64. We used... it's like we used 43 and 17. We budgeted 45, and our year-to-date actual was 38. And I put a year-end estimate at 57. But we're still so I don't have enough updates here to tell you where we're actually going to end at the end of this year. But what we're proposing is that we went from 65 to 45 as a new budget number. So we cut $20,000 out of that. Out of the electrical, right. Out of that budget. So we are using less electricity. And what's going to be really interesting here is that we have, now that we've learned how to operate the plant, it took 10 years, 12 years, now that we've learned how to run the plant, mm-hmm. we are not using, and now that everything in the plant actually works for the first time since it was built, you know, we built a UV channel there. The reason we built the solar was for the UV channels. Because we used all the UV channels all day and all night. Once we hooked up the UV channels and figured out how to work it, we were using one bank, sometimes two. But the plant was never set up. It was never completed. It opened up without any money. and it's taken me the last 2 years just to get it repaired so that it works properly. So I'm hoping to see a big drop in electric numbers overall. I'm hoping that I can beat that 45.
Oh, I was just going to say, prior to the solar panels being installed, the electric bills were about, well, they were over $10,000 a month, so $120,000 a year.
A year. Mm-hmm. So we are way down, but we're actually trying to run this so efficient, we're hoping to get it down to even less. But part of that just comes from proper operation of the plant.
Did that answer your question? Any more?
No. I guess I would like to suggest that we adjourn and go on to sanitation starting at our next meeting. I think there's an interest in going home and eating, and we are talking about a rate increase in terms of sanitation, and I don't want to rush the discussion of sanitation. So if we're ready to spend another half hour tonight, I'm ready to stay. I haven't eaten either, but I think that we could adjourn at this point and pick up sanitation next Wednesday.
Mayor, can I ask one question just for clarification?
Yes, please.
Do we have to republish the notice? Because next week we've published, it'll be a certain work session. Can we amend that?
Yeah, you haven't even posted yet.
The agenda hasn't been posted for next week.
Okay, all right, great.
No. So we'll be posting that. It will be...
It'll include
this and...
Sure. No problem.
Okay.
That'll go out tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I think we can plan on it. Yeah, okay. Good. Excellent. Would you like... does anybody have an issue with that? I'm hearing none. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor of adjourn?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Aye.